The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Very good morning to you. Welcome along to OTB AM. I'm Gerry Gilroy here with you until 9:30 this morning. Also here this morning is Owen Sheehan, who I suspect is still blown away by events yesterday.
Blown away by events is right. Came off air yesterday, and you always hate when big news breaks right at the end of the show. But that's precisely what happened yesterday. Kind of heartbreak from a journalistic standpoint, because we like to cover all the big stories here live and as they happen. But unfortunately, Kevin Kilbane's engagement came out at 9:35 a.m. yesterday.
Yes, that's what we'll go with that. It was the biggest traffic day in the history of offtheball.com.
It certainly was. The video of a man proposing is always good content, but when it's a man who has, 110 caps for the Republic of Ireland proposing in such dramatic fashion, I think it goes to a whole new level.
You know who that is?
For everybody who, I'm sure nobody's even considering joining us this morning without having done their homework and seen the video. But if not, let's do a quick frame-by-frame breakdown of, in my opinion, one of the best proposals from an Irish footballer ever. I can't think of any other video from proposing. It started like this. Kevin Kilbane in a restaurant, a swanky-looking restaurant, singing Grace. Good song. Good choice of song.
So he'd arrange for it to be on in the background, and when the first verse was on, speakers, and then they killed it. Mm. So he would come in and do the bit about the wedding ring.
Yeah, it's because we all know what's going to happen next. There's a wedding ring involved. Then he does the old switcheroo, gets down on one knee, and now Brianne knows something's up. Now she knows this. Shit is about to get real. A decision is going to have to be made. And subsequently, a handy assistant comes along, the cake with a ring, and we move it on one more frame, and you can hear her saying, "You can't be effing serious," when Kevin does it. At which point, you'd imagine Kevin's head is going 90.
Am I serious? Is there a way I can get out of this in case she's like, no?
And then we can move on to the final frame, which is just pure and utter relief from Kevin Kilbane. I don't care what he says, it was relief that he felt. Because for that brief moment, I'm sure it was a small bit of panic.
He said every second seemed like a minute, so it seemed like 15 minutes.
Yeah, we might go through some of that. I might grab some of those papers off you there. We start with the Sun in page 13 inside. Kevin doesn't skate around, engaged to ice pro Brianne after 2 months. Romantic Kevin serenaded his lover by singing the Dubliner's Grace in a packed restaurant and then got down on one knee with a ring worth almost €65,000. Kilbane, affectionately dubbed Killer by Ireland supporters, was eliminated from the skating show last week, but admitted finding love was the real prize.
Just show the picture of him in there. Yeah. So I don't know if anybody watched the show last week, but you can't really make it out there. His lips are covered in Brianne's lipstick. It looks like he's been wearing pink lipstick, as it was on telly the other night after they had a big smoochy.
Yes. It's a contagious lipstick, I think it's fair to say. The Irish Daily Star then. It's Ice Dew. Ah, you see what they did there?
Not really.
No extra time for Kev as he pops question after just 4 months. So they said 2 months here in the Sun, 4 months in the Star. I think 4 months is the accurate representation.
We think it's three.
We're saying three. Okay,
yeah,
She looked stunned as he serenaded her before a waiter came to the table with a cake, says the Irish Daily Star this morning.
And the ring.
Afterwards, they spent the night at a posh 5-star hotel in Kensington.
Hey.
Detailed.
What did they do there, Owen?
I considered where they were going to move after marriage, discussed opening song, opening
signed
dance.
Signed a prenup. Got to organise the prenup, is that it?
Precisely. Sending out wedding invitations.
Is there another one?
There's tons of them. They've got the Irish Daily Mail here, page 3. This is probably the most... They've gone for like the official Dancing on Ice photograph. Dancing for joy. Kilbane pops question to skate partner. Kilbane, 42, who played for Ireland 110 times, scoring 8 times, was seen serenading his pro skating partner in the STK London Steakhouse before dropping to one knee. So throughout the tabloids this morning, we're trying to piece together the location of this big event and successfully doing so. The Mirror, meanwhile, this is probably tab of the morning to you. With this rink, ... Kevin Kilbane proposes to Dancing on Ice partner Brianne after just 2 months. Their description of events was, as a waiter brings over a cake with a glistening ring beside it, he begins to serenade her to the delight of other diners. Brianne asks, "Are you serious?" Leaving out a word conveniently there. She then says yes, and the restaurant erupts in cheers. Though the pair were booted off Dancing on Ice during last Sunday's episode, they didn't let it dampen their spirits. Which is very true indeed. I think there's It's in the Independent and in the Herald as well this morning, but that pretty much sums up the coverage of Kevin Kilbane this morning.
Yeah, so just looking up, I'm surprised they didn't say it like at the STK London where it's like €75 per steak. That's saying, oh, they can get Wagyu skirt.
All right, okay, you're on the website.
Yeah, Kevin thanked them on his Instagram as well. In fairness, they did a good job. They arrived at just the right time. And the waiter's face, he's like putting the ring and the cake down going, she hasn't said yes yet. And he's kind of standing there going, I'm going to bear witness to this thing forever. And then she says yes. And he's like, yeah. So there was like a precise moment where he understood exactly what was going to happen too, that this could go tits up.
Has anybody got any ideas for the stag do yet? Like, I would like to hear from all
well, if
all
anybody,
viewers
if,
and listeners.
Yeah, if anybody wants to, like, you know, throw it out there for...
Is there an STK in Dublin or in anywhere in our... Is there an STK in Mayo?
He says he wants to go somewhere in the West Coast. Well, the wedding's going to be in Mayo, I think.
Okay.
I mean, like, I don't know. Yeah. As somebody in the office said, if she takes his name, she's going to be Brianne Kilbane. It was Tom Malone. I'm going to give him the full credit and blame.
So Kevin, great name.
If you're watching,
name.
It's like it's an amazing stage name.
Fantastic, absolutely brilliant.
I mean, obviously, she should probably just keep her own name, given that she's a world famous skater at this point. But like, you know, just in case. Anyway, sports news this morning: Tyrone handed a big boost. Colin McShane is going to be staying and available for the championship. The All-Star forward will stay in Ireland and not pursue an AFL career. Adelaide Crows had issued a statement this morning.
Adelaide Crows, yeah, they've
essentially said that he wasn't prepared or wasn't ready to move across the world. And
Justin Reid, who's the Crows general manager, list management and strategy, so he said that he was determined that it was in his best interest to stay in Ireland after weighing up all considerations. This is from Team Talk Mag in Tyrone. It is a big decision to relocate to the other side of the world and pursue a professional career in a different sport, said Reid. Ultimately, this was not something that Cahill was ready for, and we wish him the very best in his endeavours both on and off the field. We will continue to look for opportunities to bring talent into our club. So it seems that McShane has made the decision himself that he won't be going to Adelaide, he won't be going to the AFL.
Big news for Tyrone.
Huge.
Does it change their position in the... It does change their position in the power rankings.
Completely and utterly changes their position in the power rankings, because they were the third best team in the country last year, as things turned out. And they now have lost very few players. If any, like, to be honest, I'm holding my hands up and say, once Colin McShane had left the country, I was thinking to myself, well, you can forget about Tyrone as even as a semi finalist, they will do very, very well to get there.
So now they're
completely turns on its head.
Fringe fourth, fifth.
Yeah, like, you win Ulster and you're into
Win Ulster and it's a handy.
You're into a semi final. Yeah. You would expect them to have a good chance of. Like, it all depends on who comes through the back door into the Super 8s, but at least you're not going to be playing Kerry or Dublin, you suspect, in a Super 8s draw. So winning an Ulster Championship this year would be their big aim, and McShane gives them every chance of doing that.
Mixed night for the Irish last night in the FA Cup. Spurs got the better of a 5-goal thriller to see off the challenge of Southampton in their FA Cup fourth round replay. Heung-min Son scored a penalty 3 minutes before time, and that saw them win 3-2. Shane Long scored for Southampton. He started that game, scored their first goal. Obafemi was on the bench, Troy Parrott on the bench, but not getting a moment. Spurs awarded a home tie with Norwich in the fifth round. Celtic still 7 points clear at the top of the Scottish Premiership. The leaders maintained their winning run since the winter break with a 4-0 victory at Motherwell last night. Rangers beat Hibs 2-1. Darrell Horgan on the bench for Hibs came off with about 20 minutes to go. In that one, GMAC will look to bring his Saudi international forum to the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, which gets underway in California later today. Last week's winner on the European Tour plays in a group with Brandon Grace, Seamus Power and Padraig Harrington, also in action this week. An interesting piece in the Times today saying that GMAC is a potential for the Olympics, and we might have 3 male golfers in the Olympics. I didn't even know it was a possibility. So he's got so many ranking points at the start, since the start of the year. I think he's like 3rd in like a calendar year for Olympic ranking points, that there's a good chance he's going to make it. Racing today, a seven race card at Thurles, which goes to post at 1:15 for the first race. And the 2020 Premier League dart season gets underway. I'm not telling you that. None of your business. None of your business.
Who do you support in the Premier League?
I don't even know how it works. Villa.
You don't know how it works. It's darts. It's not that complicated. It's a league. You play against somebody. If you win your game,
as an
you go higher in the league.
Do you have a club
team? If you lose your games, you're less likely to go higher in the league.
Why is there a league? What's the point of that?
Because darts needed a week-by-week thing rather than just being in the spotlight around Christmas. And you've got the top players.
You have to have this all year?
They've got the top players playing each other every week on Thursday night. It's not Thursday. Yeah, it's been Thursday nights for like 10 years.
And did people watch it?
Tons of people watch it. Tons and tons of people watch it. Yeah, it's great.
So let me just. So the darts has been made by Sky. It has been made by pay TV. And yet you're saying constantly, oh, you can't put stuff on pay TV. No one will ever watch it. And yet look at the way darts has wormed its way into the popular imagination.
It's not me who was saying that.
Who's that? So what?
It was Ryle Nugent saying it.
You were totally agreeing with him. You were like, yeah, I totally agree with Ryle.
Yeah, but
you were like, oh, Ryle's got game here.
Yeah,
you were saying.
I'd agree with his
take. Ryle's my guy. I'm on Team Ryle, basically.
Verbatim, I think you were kind of quoting Ryle Nugent there, not me. Which is fine.
You
can get the two of us mixed up. That's okay.
Well, you said you agreed with everything he said. Here's what's coming up on the show. Michael Brickwall, 7:45. One of the first times that we've ever had the opportunity to speak to Brickwall. He just didn't do media when he was playing. We'll talk to him about that. Top five stories coming your way at 8 o'clock. The Shot Clock with Kieran Donnelly at 8:15. If you want us to talk about anything specific on the Shot Clock any week, use the hashtag OTBAM and we'll put those topics to Kieran. Sports News with Tom Malone at 8:35. Talking some Gaelic football at 8:45. Virtual Insanity, John Duggan's golf tips at 9 o'clock. And return to the top five stories at 9:15. Bring you through the papers now.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The back page of the Herald this morning. Quinn, we'll fix up league. So Niall Quinn was obviously doing media yesterday. He was asked the big questions by our man Will, who was asking him all about Kev's engagement and actually got some great stuff from him. But anyway, condition set in rescue deal as FAI aim to regain trust. This is Dan McDonald's story. Same piece is carried in the Independent, obviously. How DCU paved way for Dub success. Manager Moyna recounts naughty glory. Is that Paddy Andrews, it looks like, with a picture there winning at DCU? Would that be right, Tommy? Was Paddy Andrews one of your DCU teammates? No, he wasn't listening. That's great. Thanks, Tommy. AFL raids are insane, Moynihan. So this is interesting. Seamus Moynihan says that he wants the AFL to pay and compensate clubs when they steal players. And this is exactly the deal that had been brokered by Ty Kennelly, because they do that for everybody. That's like it's exactly the same. If Home Farm send a player to Liverpool or Man United, Liverpool or Man United pay Home Farm a development fee. And obviously the GAA can't accept it because they're an amateur organisation. So maybe there is some mechanism for this to happen.
Maybe it's as simple as you take a professional player who has made an intra-county appearance at minor level or above, you then get compensated. Very strict parameters there. It will only be for a couple of players and the money goes straight to the club rather than to the county. Therefore, the county can take control of, you know, some of the athletic minors who perhaps aren't as talented football-wise and can start chipping them off. The club would always make use of those players and therefore they should be the ones who benefit. I can see it happen in practice. The GAA say it's messy, but I wonder if they are the very strict rules for shipping a player off to Australia, it would actually be fine and it wouldn't be the start of something that would be kind of like opening the floodgates or something.
Yeah, you'd try and do, would you do a really good deal? Do you do, like, is it 100 grand? It's not, is it? Is it 20 grand?
It's not 100 grand anyway, because what are they earning a year?
40.
So, like, is it worth probably 1 year's wages, is it? Like, with 40 grand, you pay your...
And then, Moynihan's point is this puts up a barrier, so they're not just hoovering everybody up and going, well, so there's no risk. Like, at the moment, it is ultimately... I know, like I said, it's not risk-free. You've got to pay flights and you've got to pay the salary. But if you get a player who you pay 40 grand for 3 years, he turns into a guy who like plays 50% of the time, then happy days.
Happy days is right. So what's one more 40 grand? I think it should be whatever your contract is, then a one-year salary goes to the club. Is that fair?
Yeah, the only thing is then if I...
start undercutting
exactly
the players.
So
it should be a flat fee of like 30 to 50. Something along those lines.
Should the money go to the player?
No. The player's getting paid professionally anyway. This is the opportunity for the player to pay.
How much should go to the GPA?
Nothing.
How much should go to the agent?
None.
Right.
It's going straight to the club.
Right.
Well, the agent can get his own fee by talking to the player himself.
But if the agent gets the money for the club... So let's say there's a player who's like, a fringe... intercounty player, but mm-hmm. has a great agent who goes, you've got the perfect athletic profile for an AFL team. You go off, you do the combine, and you succeed, and then you go and you do two trials for different clubs.
You're saying the agent is making the club money.
Yeah.
So they should get a cut of that.
Yeah, look, that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying that this is how business works. Mm. That somebody's going to go, hang on a second, how exactly does that...
Well, that should be up to the club to negotiate their own private terms with the agent.
Well, the club, well, club needs a flat fee, that's the thing. AFL needs to be paying the club directly, in your model.
Well, like, if I'm running a GAA club, this sounds terrible, but I would be saying to an agent, if you can get one of my players to Australia, I'll give you 10%. If you can get two of them to Australia, I'll give you 20%.
No, it gets lower. It gets 8%.
Is that how it works? Yeah.
Well, I'll
never be a chairman of a GAA club. But also, it's actually kind of absurd when you say put it in those terms. Can you try and...
Can you horse out my teenagers?
You would like to think that it would never, ever come to that.
That's exactly what it would
GAA
do.
GAA clubs actually prefer success because they have one of their best players available to them.
Yeah, but, you know... I don't know. Look, it becomes a very difficult thing to negotiate. Unless every time a player goes, money goes centrally to the GAA and they distribute it. So here's the thing, right? That under 14, say they went to a development squad with the county, and that's where they end up getting the best level of coaching, because more than likely that's where they are getting access to, you know, some coaching ticket that has been brought together by the best available coaches in the county, and they go through the grades under 14, under 16, minor, win a minor All-Ireland, and they're like a superstar. What role does the club play? What role does the county play? Does that have to break down a bit? Can that money just be ring-fenced for coaching in the county? So it's not specifically to the club. Wouldn't that be better?
I guess it would, but you're saying giving it essentially to Croke Park.
Well, I'm saying that, so this goes... The AFL, 10 players from Ireland who are Irish qualified end up going to the AFL next year. For that, the AFL pays Croke Park 400 grand, and that 400 grand goes straight into a coaching pot. And that coaching, like, shouldn't necessarily just be going to the counties that are producing these players. It should probably be spread across everybody. Like, say 3 Dubs and 4 Kerry lads go one season, right? Does all that money then go into Dublin and Kerry again, who are already producing all these players? Or should it actually be going to Carlow and Leitrim and Louth? This is not just an opportunity for them to rebalance things.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that if your county is actually producing these players, because you make a valid point that the development squads are doing a lot for these young players. But no, I don't think it should be spread around different counties. I think that if the county is responsible for producing these players, then their club and their county perhaps should get a slice of the pie, and the entire pie should be for them. Like, and then it's a huge boost then to someone like Louth, who have had a player go to the AFL.
Wexford footballers.
Wexford footballers, the same, that they will get that boost as well. Like, if...
Should the money, I don't know, like, maybe the money can only be spent on something. I can't decide if the money should be spent on coaching or if it should be spent on capital, or if the club gets to decide what the hell they want to do with it. Because the trouble with that is that an outside manager comes in. There's like a carpetbagger outside manager coming in who goes like, 40 grand, lads. Yeah, that's... How much is your fee this year? 40 grand?
That is 100% a possibility. 100% a possibility of that happening. That is the real danger of it. So coaching would be, I don't want to say a foolproof way of doing it, but if it is for development within counties and for underage coaching and, I don't know, for your development officers that go around to schools and coach.
Well, so there's a template there. Like, every county already has those GDAs in place, and some of the clubs... Certainly in Dublin, the club pays half and the county pays half. And I don't know, I presume that's not the case in every club. But what do you think?
Yeah, like I know for a fact that there are clubs who...
And the AFL have said to Ty Kennelly in the past, this money is available for them. Seamus Moynihan is calling for something Ty Kennelly has already broken
in the past. The AFL have no issue with this, absolutely not. I'm sure they kind of feel like they're on a runaway train here and they don't know how they're getting away with it. We better move on. Back page of the Mirror is Special Son. Jose's delight as Spurs see off Saints in Cup with late penalty. The Irish Daily Mail then is taking a stand. CJ hits back at trolls for going after his family. That is the Irish Daily Mail. The Irish Daily Star then, on the back page, we've already shown you the Kilbane story, is Iggy Stardust. Odion Ighalo has spoken for the first time since becoming a Manchester United player. He's looking to save United's forward woes. Quinn says, critics have it wrong. Seamus on the mark there, as you've already mentioned, and Sun rises to the occasion.
The Irish Times rugby first two pages. Stander stands up to the flack. I've always got a point to prove. Performance and numbers stack up, and Ireland are lucky to have him, says Gerry Thornley. Concussions bring high tackle trial into focus, And CBC deal held up as unions insist on terrestrial TV. We'll come back to that a little bit later on. So that's the CBC deal where the 300 million, 300 million is going to go to the unions, the six unions in the Six Nations, but only if they can agree a deal. And then there's that Seamus Moynihan story as well. And is there anything else? Yeah, there's strong League of Ireland, key to the game's future, says Niall Quinn. There's also focus on the women's rugby team this week.
New Dawn says the back of the Sun. Messi row at Barca has Pep on red alert. Manchester City are going to swoop for Lionel Messi if he doesn't patch things up with Eric Abidal and Barcelona. And Spanish giants join race for Grealish. Barcelona and Real Madrid have joined the race to sign Aston Villa star Jack Grealish. Both of the Spanish giants are tracking the playmaker as they choose their top transfer targets for the summer. It's emergency Ward-Prowse. Horror injury for Saints. Then Son
gashed his knee.
Yeah, it looks bad.
It looked like there was already a scab there and it's just broken.
I'm not sure what his scab history is. United, we will stand, says Niall Quinn. He's open to a chat about a United Ireland team. Talking kind of loosely about that yesterday, obviously respecting all the wishes of the IFA and the Irish League before kind of saying, yes, this is something that is definitely going to happen. He's open to it.
Look,
his door is always open, he says.
That's the political answer and it's bang on. It's exactly what it should be. Quinn, trust us and we'll deliver. Interim CEO promises League of Ireland action but urges caution on all island plans. My fear is that we may have got the wrong Englishman in charge, says Neil Francis, who obviously is talking about Stuart Lancaster there. And huge boost for Tyrone as McShane to stay on. This is big, big news. Tyrone are now up to fifth or fourth in Owen Sheehan's power rankings at the end of the year. Your predictive power rankings?
Possibly third or fourth.
There's no possibly. It's the end of the year. They either are or they aren't.
Third? Yeah.
Right, so you've got Dublin, Kerry, Tyrone.
Yeah.
They're ahead of Donegal and they're ahead of Galway now.
You see, you're putting me on the spot here.
I am, but like you are the power rankings maestro. Come on.
You know what? Fifth.
Right.
I've changed my mind completely. Fifth.
I've changed my mind. Two more from me. Have you got to go on yet?
Irish Examiner. United Ireland. Quinn defuses basketball route, wants Irish sports to grow together and holding the line. CJ Stander on the fine margins between criticism and abuse.
Two more from me. One is the Irish News. GAA has become ripe for the picking by AFL, says Moynihan. I think Kerry feel this more pronounced because Tighe was doing it and Tomás O'Shea didn't like that.
Yeah, and then you had David Clifford being linked, which was...
Yeah, but he didn't go in the end.
I know, but when you had...
They had to get their shit together.
He's definitely the highest profile talent that has ever
imagine
been linked.
Imagine if he'd gone.
But we would have been sitting here saying, you know, he's only a minor.
Yeah.
4-4, he was
wasn't
a minor
that good anyway.
Yeah, he's never going to make it.
As the loop of the highlights from Croke Park.
Which is what we're saying about Mark O'Connor
again
now.
And again and again and again. Right, so 7:53. One more for you. Impressed with the manner of the victory, if not... Who is that young man? Who is that fresh-faced, clean-shaven young man?
I don't know.
What is that? That was like... How long ago was that on? 15 years?
14.
This is Owen Sheehan's column in Kerry's Eye.
I was comparing Jose to Peter Keane this morning.
While there is a string of improvements still required, we can take comfort from the way Kerry snatched two league points from a precarious situation. Jose Mourinho sat there with a belly full of glee. Full stop. He'd watched his Tottenham Hotspur side.
That's what your full stop in
annunciations. Pep Guardiola's Man City in classic Jose style and Mourinho special, comma. How's the capital I? If you will. Oh yeah, right. It's good stuff, Owen. Everybody should go out and buy the Kerry's Eye.
What else did I say?
That's all I've read.
It's like you didn't read it. How can you say it's good stuff if you haven't read the column?
Because I know you. I trust you.
Are you patronising me by saying it's good stuff and you haven't even read the column?
I trust you.
No, like you haven't read the column and you're saying it's good stuff.
I saw you yesterday squeaking out the words like, you know, like a constipated 2-year-old
yesterday,
squeaking out their first poo. That's what you were like. I could see the sweat on your brow.
Yesterday.
The beads.
I write that out on a Sunday evening, hence the... It was just after watching Jose.
Right, 7:54 this morning. Kerry's Eye, where can we get it?
I don't know. You tell me. You've clearly read the column. It's great stuff, apparently.
You're not even going to advertise your own column.
You saw me writing it, apparently. But...
Okay, time for our main story this morning. Michael Brick Walsh joined us in studio yesterday here on OTBAM. It was our first time to properly chat to him ever and off the ball. You're going to enjoy this. Have a look.
OTBAM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Right, so Electric Ireland have live streamed a number of key games throughout the 2020 season to date and will stream both Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Cup semi-finals this weekend. Check out electricireland.ie/HEC or ga.ie/GA now to access the streams. Electric Ireland's First Class Rivals campaign in 2020 celebrates the unique aspect of the Electric Ireland Sigerson and Fitzgibbon Cups, which sees the formation of unexpected alliances when county rivals unite to play for their college in pursuit of one common goal. Michael Walsh, Michael Brick Welsh, is our guest. He's an Electric Ireland ambassador. What's the name? What are we supposed to call you?
Go with Michael.
Yeah, we'll skip it there. And your surname?
Welsh.
You're Welsh. Grant. Well, that's okay. That's easy. And what's the story with Brick? Who gets to use that?
We use it on the field, maybe not in the studio.
Right, fair enough. Are you retiring Brick? Is that done? Are you no longer Brick?
Yeah, we'll take a break on it. I know, to be fair, I'm probably stuck with it for the rest of my life. It probably got caught with it in school and it has stuck ever since, you know.
How? What? Do you remember the day? Do you remember, like, it was just...
It was handed down. I think an older brother had a nickname and he just handed it down to me. But it went so bad in Waterford, people thought it was a double barrel name at one stage. Unfortunately, I'm stuck with that and I have to get used to it. So.
What about the Brick Flick then? Is that patented?
Yeah, I was talking to doing a bit of media earlier, and we were talking about it. And I suppose the genius that came up with it obviously came up with two words that rhymed. So I suppose I'm stuck with that as well.
Could have been worse.
Exactly. Could have been a lot worse.
Big Brick energy, I think, is your. So how is retirement going?
Actually, look, there hasn't much changed yet. I suppose at the moment, like, the lads are in pre-season, you know, and they're...
Isn't that, I'd say?
Yeah, to be fair...
I was being sarcastic.
I always enjoy training, like, you know what I mean? So it is a bit of a miss, but, like, you know, I suppose I'm not seeing, like, they have two games played of significance so far, like, but when the evenings get longer and things like that, you'll probably miss it that bit more. But you know, I'm kept busy at home, and obviously when you retire from county, that's it. They don't realise you're going back to your club as well, like, you know. And I'll be obviously playing for a few more years until they tell me to give it up, and then you'll obviously have the underage and things like that to get involved in as well.
So there's a plan in place to fill your hours.
There is, yeah. But look, not a whole pile of thinking has got into it yet. I suppose I'm only gone with 4 or 5 months. I've been involved in Waterford, thank God, since I was 18, 19, you know. So that's a long while ago now, as everyone reminds me. And, you know, so it will be a big change for me. But not yet, I suppose. When the evenings get longer and when you're starting to go to the matches and things like that, that'll be a big thing when you can't impact an outcome of a game or anything like that. That's a big change, you know.
Why did you stop?
Look, in fairness, I was very lucky to keep going for as long as I did. I was extremely lucky that managers wanted me for that period of time, and I knew at the end of last year it was time to go, you know. I don't know, but as I said, I was very lucky to play as long as I did, and at any time I could have been told I wasn't wanted anymore, you know what I mean. But I was lucky to get as far as I did.
Was it a clear-cut decision?
It was, yeah. I was lucky enough, I suppose, to come back last year and play again, like, you know. But, you know, because it's probably 50-50 probably the year before. But then, you know, you get back into it and you drive on, and then you make your decision again last year, again at the end of last year, you know. And look, I was happy. I played for as long as I did and enjoyed as much as I did.
There must have been a slight temptation with the new manager coming in to just give it one more year.
No, look, I knew, like, in fairness, they're very lucky with Liam Cahill. I'd say he's an excellent man, like, you know, but he knew I wasn't going back, and I'd say he was probably happy enough I wasn't going back as well. But you know, look, he's building his own setup and his own team now, and in fairness, it's about GAA, and any sport is about youth, and I was lucky, as I said, to enjoy it for as long as I did and be part of it for as long as I did. But it's all about the younger players now, and Waterford have numerous younger players coming through, and hopefully they'll get their chance and take it this year.
Have you gone to any games yet, or are you going to leave that off for a while?
I didn't get to go to the Cork game. I was hoping to get to that. Obviously, the Westmeath game was up in Westmeath, but no, I will. I'm going to look forward to being a supporter. I haven't been a supporter with 20 years, I suppose, nearly. So I'll enjoy getting back to that. I suppose the only difficult thing from a past player's point of view is when you hear people being so critical of players, like, you know what I mean? It's hard to sit in the stand and people cutting up players that have obviously put in the time and effort and work, and things mightn't be going for as well on the day. You know, people don't realise you might be a good player and you might be trying your best, but you're on a fella that's the best in his county and he's obviously trying his best, and people don't appreciate that some days it goes for you and some days it goes against you, you know.
Can you hear that when you're playing?
No, I never, to be honest about it, people would say to me it was a great atmosphere or there was a great crowd there or whatever. I actually wouldn't be able to tell who was there or whatever, you know what I mean? It's rare. I suppose when you're so focused on it, and yeah, particularly the inter-county, like there's rare that there's a game where there's only, like the lesser people, you're more inclined to hear that at a club game than you are at a county game, you know?
Yeah, I'd say, and as the county player playing in a club match, sometimes you get it more than everybody else.
Ah, you do, because I suppose number one, I suppose you're on the ball a bit more, like, you know what I mean, maybe in some circumstances, and you may not touch the ball either, you know, but people are expecting a lot and sometimes again it goes for you. But when people, it's easy for often an inter-county player playing a club game, he draws attention from two or three other watching out for him, like, and they're cutting him off and other fellas can play well and they're saying, where's my inter-county player, he's not touching the ball or he's not doing this. But that is the way they draw attention from opposing players and from opposing supporters and even their own supporters.
Yeah, yeah, it is kind of attention seeking. I want to ask you about the Fitzgibbon before we get into some other stuff. You won three Fitzgibbons, is that right?
Yeah, I was lucky to be part of an excellent WIT team. I was playing in two and I was a sub for one. And
who was on that team? Was that Henry?
No, I was after. I'm not younger than Henry Shefflin. obviously Henry went before and I think he won two Fitzgibbons, you know, and they kind of started Waterford in terms of WIT in terms of winning, but there were some fantastic players like JJ Delaney was one of the main men, Ollie Morn was down in WIT, but there was fantastic names, and I know I'm naming out the inter-county fellas, but of that era there was club players that's the nice thing about Fitzgibbon, you have players that never go on to have an inter-county career and they can be staring at college's level, and you know it's still the same, like, you know, you see the players that are involved at the weekend are fantastic players and household names, a lot of them, but nowadays it's different. Back then, like, to put two back to back, which you used to see are obviously trying to do at the weekend, is very hard nowadays, because when I was playing, you probably had three or four teams that could win it. Now there's six or seven. The standard's gone very, and I suppose it's a change in the culture of Ireland that you have people going to third level now that you didn't have maybe when I was there. A lot more trades going on when I was going to college, you know, and you see it now. There's like Mary I, Carlo IT, DCU, like the three of those, like when I was playing, they wouldn't have been looked at as a strong, but over the last 5 or 6 years, particularly Mary I, when you look about it, if you spoke about it 20 years and say Mary I in a Fitzgibbon Cup semi-final and they won one there recently, you wouldn't think it, but it's just the change in Ireland, I suppose.
Do you think we need to protect these competitions?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I enjoyed it immensely playing in it. You know, I suppose the inter-county competitions take precedent, unfortunately, over a lot of games. And it's easy for me to say that now that I'm out of it. But I think the colleges is a massive thing. If you asked any of those players, like, what do they want to be involved in, obviously they'd love to be winning Fitzgibbon. You see that, the Cork team, and I know I'm picking out the high-profile fellas, but they're obviously mad to win another Fitzgibbon medal, and that's what it's all about. And they're getting the opportunity to play high-profile games, you know what I mean? And that's the thing. We all, like, if you speak to a 5-year-old or a 30-year-old in any sport and ask them what they want to do at training, they all say, I want to play a match. So, with the Fitzgibbon, you get to play with it. I suppose maybe more work and realisation needs to come from management that these players have a training schedule with their county or whatever, and I suppose not to. When we were in WIT, we had a right idea. Like, we didn't train that much together. We'd meet up, but we wouldn't train a huge amount because most of us were inter-county players and had
training.
And you didn't want to suffocate fellas with training either. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Good crack.
I was, like, WIT was at the time was a smaller college, like the three I probably mentioned earlier, a smaller college, well, perhaps not TCU, but the other two. They're a smaller college and it's a kind of a community, the GA, people know themselves, they're meeting every day and they know themselves and or know each other and they're playing together and they're trying to win together, and that was it's kind of a community within a college, like, you know.
Yeah, you've also got the whole aspect of the league not being as important as it used to be with no relegation. You've got these pre-season competitions in January. like, I think the message should be let them off the leash, let them play Fitzgibbon or Sigurdsson in whatever, in football's case, and just let them play this football, because who knows, they might come back having learned something new or picked up something from playing with people from different counties.
100%, yeah. Like, when I was there, there was a lot of Kilkenny, and it's great now from a Waterford perspective. This last 5 or 6 years, there's been a huge amount of Waterford players on the WIT team. But when I was going to college down there, there used to be 6 or 7 Kilkenny fellas, so there used to be Blagairden and calling it KIT at the time, as opposed to WIT. But yeah, like, and you learn from other players, and you get to see what's going on. And like I always say, like JJ Delaney, he was on our team, and he was playing corner back, like, and he was hurler of the year before. And I said to him, we were training in January, probably February, and I said to him, and I was only getting to know him at the time, he had a great year the year before, or last year, and this was January, I'd say, February max, and I said to him, he had a great year, and he said to me, well, it's over now. So it's a bit of a realisation that you park your success and move forward.
So you do actually kind of, you do swap stuff, it's not like...
You do, yeah, you do.
You're not killing each other in training, a little bit.
Little bit.
I'd say those training sessions were good. When you look back, when you made the decision to retire, what did you look back on and think, yeah, I like that, or Jesus, was there an itch that you didn't scratch?
Look, obviously, I like everyone, you'd think everyone anyway, my biggest thing was, I suppose, to win an All-Ireland. When I came onto the inter-county scene, first Waterford, where they probably had won the Munster final in 2002, which is a massive step for Waterford at that time, from where they were coming from. But like my career, I suppose I would have loved to win an All-Ireland, and I suppose that was the ultimate goal, and unfortunately it was unsuccessful for me. Like, it'll always be a disappointment for me. Like, it's not as if I think about it every morning or anything like that, but that's what you want. I always wanted to finish the year as a winner, you know what I mean? And I never was. Probably, obviously wasn't good enough, because, you know, a team, like the best team always wins, and there's no point in saying otherwise, you know?
I'm not sure about that. Sometimes teams get a bit lucky. Like, it's very rare, right? And that Galway team was a great team. You were also a great team. That Mayo team that never won in All-Ireland, they were a great team. Like, but we've had this conversation a bit recently. Conor McDonald was in with us. He's obviously younger and has just come off a season where I think Wexford will always think that was a really good chance for them, because they had Tipperary on the rack, and then Tipperary was so far ahead of Kilkenny, they will talk themselves into it, and they beat Kilkenny already. So I want to play you this clip, if we can just turn the sound up on this. So here's Conor McDonald. We were asking him if it's worth it if you're not winning All-Ireland. Have a listen.
I would be very, very disappointed, if, especially with the panel that we have now at the moment, and the group of players that we have, and the kind of core group we've had over the last 5 or 6 years, if I was to wind up not winning an All-Ireland with those, I'd be telling you a lie if I thought I'd be happy with that. That's just straight up. If I wind up not winning an All-Ireland, I'm sure if you asked, you know, the likes of Brick Walsh, who has been unbelievable, he's picked up all stars, he'd trade them all in, I'm sure, you know. He's just one example of so many.
Yeah, he is a good example, though, because I think the rest of the country thinks he's had a great career.
Yeah, sure, I agree. I think he's had an unbelievable career. He's been a stalwart for them for so many years. I don't know whether he would measure success on that.
Sure, he does.
I'm sure he does measure his success. But if you don't win an All-Ireland, I would say you measure your success differently after your playing career is over.
So obviously we were talking about you in your absence. I apologise for that. It's a very rude thing to do. At the same time, it's a great career. Like, the missing medal is just a missing medal. It shouldn't define you, I don't think.
Well, to be fair, I probably agree with Conor. I know it's probably over the top, and maybe some people might look at it as harsh, but it's something like, realistically, you go out every year. It's all about team success, you know what I mean? I admire individual sports people. I don't know how they do it on their own. They're fantastic, like, to be able to do it, to drive themselves on when they might be having a bad day or might be sick or whatever. I'm part of a team, like, you know, I was part of a team, and my ultimate thing was to win with them, you know what I mean? So I was never too pushed on individual awards. That's not what I was doing, it to get individual accolades or individual awards. It wasn't about that. It was the 10 minutes after winning a game. That's what the biggest thing for me was, the running around in horrible conditions on a December night or a January evening or whatever. That was all to win the ultimate. And I'm not over it. There's no pity or anything like that. It's just a disappointment from my point of view that we didn't win one.
Yeah, but the journey to not winning one isn't that different from the journey to winning one. It's not like you can go back now and pinpoint, geez, if we'd done something in that training session or if that refereeing decision had gone our way, I would have a medal. Does that change you as a person not having a medal, I wonder?
Not at all. Like, you know, we'd fantastic times, like, you know what I mean, as a group. But, like, again, like, it's like, I suppose, maybe if you use it as a checklist or whatever, like, you know what I mean, and you wanted to, that's the way I was. And not everyone is the same, you know what I mean? And, again, the camaraderie, the crack, and the teams and players I was with, it was great, like, you know what I mean. But that said, what did I start doing it for, and what does any player start doing it for in when they start out? They want to win the ultimate, and the ultimate is not all in the middle, like, you know. And, like, to be fair, if Conor McDonald, from his point of view, wasn't saying that, you know what I mean, why is he bother playing with it? And obviously he is, like, you know. But so, as we start out here now in January, February again with the inter-county scene, every hurling team is looking at that, you know what I mean? And they want to be the best, everyone wants to be the best, and they want to have something to show for it at the end of the year. And I was like that, harshly so maybe, but that was my opinion.
But it was worth it.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
You'd do it all again.
Ah, you would, yeah. Yeah,
knowing now that you're not going to get one, you'd still bust the gut to do it.
Yeah, you would. You might try and get there, but 100%. Like, I enjoyed it. I suppose the low points and things like that, you learn an awful lot about yourself, about your team when you lose. 100%. Like, you know. But look, it is. A fella said in the dressing room before, and it always stuck with me. It's all about the 10 minutes after that game, like after winning. That's what it's all about. It's 100% is, like, you know, if you weren't into the team ethos, you wouldn't be playing a team sport. And that's what I always found. It wasn't a slip back on an individual thing or anything like that. It was all about the overall medals together.
Yeah, I wonder when you kind of think about it that way, that's what makes winning so special, is that not everybody can have it. Knowing that this is exclusive to you, to whether it's a Munster Championship for that year or an All-Ireland Championship for that year, knowing that there will be people who don't have any of these medals, like, that's probably what makes it so great, the level of risk that is involved beforehand.
Yeah, and again, I always sum up going back to the individual stuff. Like, you can always debate an All-Star, or you can say, he wasn't good enough, or that fella should be in the team of the decade, or this fella was better, or he was a much better hurler. But you can't really, well, you definitely can't debate an All-Ireland final. And that's the thing, like, you get to the summit and people say, oh, it wasn't a great hurling championship, or it wasn't a great football championship. But, like, no one's saying, oh, they don't deserve to win it, like, you know what I mean? You get your just rewards, like, as a team, and you have the medal to prove it, and no one can argue with that.
The All-Ireland final, is that a game that haunts you in any way, or are you happy enough that you gave your best on that day?
Yeah, look, in 2017, it is disappointing looking back, but again, I would always go with the best team always wins. You can't make excuses for it, you know what I mean? Like, Galway were the better team, they got off to a good start. Look, there's always opportunities. If we did this or if we did that, we could have had a chance, but could have, should have, isn't any good. It's all about the team that comes out on top, and we weren't good enough on the day, and you have to take it on the chin.
Your team was one of the most dissected in the media of any of the Irish sports teams over the last two decades, because you were trying something different, and when it worked, the team got credit, and when there was any kind of kink in it at all whatsoever, the hurling cognoscenti were out going, oh, this is ridiculous, can't you? What are they trying to do? They're ruining the game. What was it like to be in the inside of that?
Again, now I'm not a huge person. Today is probably an unusual journey for me in terms of into the media world and things like that. I would have shunned it during my hurling career, and I'm definitely not a social media man. So I probably would have escaped a lot of that. Obviously, I listen to yourselves an awful lot now.
Were people not saying it to you on the street, though? And were your mates not going, Jesus, what's with this?
Look, people always do. And like, this is the thing. Like, people always challenge things differently. Like, you know, in fairness, we were inside in a setup, and we enjoyed it. We were very together as a group of players. And people, you'll always have people giving out. Like, you know, when we were, like, when Waterford were playing the fantastic hurling in 07, the noughties, like, people would have said, yeah, they're fantastic, but they concede an awful lot, like, you know what I mean? So I suppose there's two sides to it. I see it at the football at the moment, like, the people are very critical of it, whereas I find it very interesting how you get around this blanket defence. And like, this is the thing, it depends on what you want. Like, I was at the Club All Ireland, and you know, you'd have to, like, Cora Finn came out and out on top, like, but you have to admire, I can't even think of Kilcoo, the way they went about it. Like, yeah, it's all, look, it's not for some, and unfortunately I'm of the opinion that a lot of people aren't. I like winning, and I suppose you do what it takes, which is not for everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah. So in the middle of that, you kind of had no doubts. There was no outside noise getting into the camp going, Jesus, maybe they're right.
No, like, in fairness, like, for me anyway, we believed in what we were doing. We believed in Derek and what he was trying to do with ourselves, and like, we were happy to do it. And we were, like, to be fair, during that time, particularly during Derek's time, like, we were very close to winning certain games, like, you know what I mean? And you know, the scoring, particularly the year we got to All-Ireland, like, the scoring prowess of Waterford was fairly good that year, like, you know what I mean? It was up there. Like, I don't know what we got against Cork in the semi-final, but it was a big score, like, you know. And there was plenty of goal opportunities. But people, unfortunately, people see something and they like to go on the negative. And everyone is entitled to their opinion, don't get me wrong, but people overemphasize it, and over, if someone is not for it, they go against it. But like, if people have so much issues with it, just go and beat it themselves, like, you know what I mean? Like, I just, like, you have to adapt whatever way a team plays nowadays, and that's the way it is. Like, gone are the days you can be guaranteed that no team in Ireland at the moment, in hurling or football or in any sport, go out and catch the ball and lamp it up the field and then run after it, and they have to try and win it. Everton is too a tactical aspect of it, and people hone in on the negative side of things a lot, you know.
But if you look at the Wexford-Tipperary game last year, Wexford are supposed to be the equivalent of the Black Death of to some hurling people, because they've got sweepers and sometimes they play with two. And that game was one of the best games that we've had in recent years. They scored an astoundingly good goal, and you can see that Davies already moving things on. So, like, that's how the game evolves and develops.
Exactly. And, like, look, like, the other side of things, people like to emphasise things that they don't see in their own team or in the traditional teams. Like, you know, a lot of other teams, and now I'm no interest in talking about sweepers or anything like that, but a lot of teams, they play, I used to play as a centre-back, and I was probably very defensive as a centre-back, but it was akin to a lot of other teams at the time, and still, even last year's All-Ireland, like, a lot of teams, like, I was watching Limerick last weekend, and you'd have to be very impressed with the way they play, but they're very solid as a back unit, and they have the players that get up and get down. Like, even Kilkenny, like, you know, who I admire. I work a lot in Kilkenny, actually. I know a lot of the players, but they were fantastic at covering, working back, but working forward. Like, you know, and they had the in their armoury to be able to launch the ball high and long, and had the ability to win it. The ball stuck even if it was on two on one man, particularly during the noughties and early last decade. Like, you know what I mean? They were brilliant at winning that high ball even when they were outnumbered.
Were they the best team that you played against?
Kilkenny. Actually, look, in fairness, you can't argue with it. The stats are there. However, sure, Henry Shefflin probably won 10 All-Ireland medals while I was playing. Like, you know what I mean? So you can't argue with that. They were a fantastic team, like, you know. And but, like, again, things change. You look at it now, and Tipper, obviously, coming off a great win last year, and they've two losses already in the league, like, you know what I mean? And they're playing, I was hugely impressed with Limerick last Sunday, but it's only January and February, you know what I mean? So a lot can change. You see it last year, everyone was talking about Limerick and came up short last year in the quarterfinal against Kilkenny, was it? And you know, that just goes to show Kilkenny biting back. So you never know it with hurling. Unfortunately, I suppose, if you're being realistic, there's probably only four teams maybe that can win it. But you're in a championship that they can all beat each other at some stage throughout it, and they will.
Well, that's what we want. I have two quick questions for you. The football people in the office, him included, want a sin bin or a black card in hurling.
I personally, I think don't miss it. Hurling is meant to be the fastest field sport, and let go. And I think at the moment, what's wrong, but a little bit tampering with it. I see the referees, and the referees mightn't think I'm the best fella in the world to be saying on this, but they have assessors, and they're assessing them in slow down time, and like a lot of stuff that you could do in hurling with a hurley that can go anywhere is accidental, like, you know what I mean, within reason. Now, you know, it can swing, it can move, it can hit a fella in the head, it can get sent off. I saw someone getting sent off now, can't you? Or the clear match, Sean Conlon, like, that wasn't, I'd be amazed if John Conlon tried that. He didn't, you know what I mean?
Not Irish dancing is what you're saying.
Well, like, what happens then with black cards is it brings diving into it a bit, like, you know what I mean? And with the best will in the world, you'd love to think it wouldn't. It does, like, you know what I mean? It just brings it in. And I think if you can leave a go, but my point on the assessors is they're not looking at it in real time, and they're slowing it down. They're saying, well, you should have done that. So they're scrutinised a lot, the referees, and it is hard to manage it. Like, hurling is a fast sport. And I suppose if you went through an inter-county game, which is very fast, versus a club game, if a lot of the altercations that happened in inter-county happened in club, you would probably be blowing the whistle every 30 seconds because the referee can see it that much more. And you see it in the club games in the winter when the score is 115 to 116 and the free taker gets 12 points, like, yeah. You know what I mean? And that's what happens. I just think, and don't get me wrong, you have to be realistic. You can't leave free rein and you can't leave it go wild, but you have to leave it go. That's why people enjoy hurling, and that's why the football gets maybe unfair criticism. Like, I enjoy the football, I really do, but like, then the referees, they have to, because they're technical fouls, yeah. But they're blowing the whistle. But then if you analyse a game as and see the first 20 minutes in terms of no freeze, and the last 20 minutes in terms of freeze every 30 seconds that are left go, because everyone's leaving at it, and I suppose it's quicker at the start as well, and it's frantic, and there's no freeze given within reason. And then at the end, it's free.
Yeah. I think what Germany says is the football people at the office are wondering if you're coming back to play with the Watford footballers at any point.
And they definitely wouldn't want me.
No. Now that you've got this media day out, are you going to do more of it? It seems like you enjoy it.
Ah, sure, look, it's new. I'd probably get slated for all the wrong stuff I said.
It's good to be wrong, you know?
Yeah, it's good to be wrong. Look, I've never really put myself out on this side of things before.
Why not?
I suppose I was brought up in the era where generally a fella spoke to the media and he had a big full page article on the Saturday or Sunday, and he went out on the Sunday and he was desperate. That's what I was brought up in.
But Larkhorn was scored a hat trick after doing the double page spread.
Yeah,
in the Ireland final.
Yeah, and it can happen. And to be fair, that's what I was going to say. Like, some people, and particularly nowadays, they're able to carry it that lot more. And like, I could say something crazy today with the way the media has gone, and tomorrow no one will care. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I could say I'm taking over this show tomorrow, and you'll be gone tomorrow. So
you're welcome to it if you want.
I hear the money is big. But that's the way it is now, you know.
So if you want to give us something that we can turn into a story for the next 24 hours, where
I'm too bland for that now. You know,
those Kilkenny feckers whatever you want. Yeah. Well, you're always welcome back. Brick is retired. Michael West, thanks very much for joining us.
No matter. Thanks very much. Thanks, Liv. OTB
AM. Right, you're very welcome back. Here's the top five stories that we're covering for you this morning on OTB AM at 11 minutes past 8. Number one, Niall Quinn out doing media yesterday. Number two is CBC. This is the company who are buying into rugby in a big way. They've got a stake in the Pro 14. They've got a stake in the Guinness Premiership. And they're on the verge of sealing a 27% stake in the Six Nations, but they need to get control of the television broadcast deals. That's a sticking point at the moment, because the Six Nations want a guarantee that some matches will continue to be on terrestrial TV, and we'll see where that goes. Carl McShane is staying in Tyrone, so he's available. It doesn't look like this is it now. That deal is done. He's never going to Australia. It's not like he's sticking around for this year. He's sticking around for good. That's the implication.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I think that the door is definitely ajar for Colin McShane if he changes his mind.
Messi, the City was story number four. This was following on from the story we covered with Graham Hunter yesterday. Civil war at Camp Nou, as Eric Abidal
has called out the players. Messi was like, who are you talking about? Name names on Instagram. Very public. And England-Scotland has turned out to be one of the more interesting build-ups to a rugby match that we've seen. We hate you, you hate us, is the theme.
Yeah, this is Lewis Ludlam, who's been talking this week. They hate us and we hate them is the line that you mentioned there. So Eddie Jones came out and branded them a niggly side on Tuesday and then promised like a war against Scotland at the weekend. Sometimes you're not sure if these are just kind of like notes that just kind of pop off otherwise mundane quotes, but that is not the case with Lewis Ludlam here. He says, it's a battle, it's going to be a war, and it's something we're excited for and we're ready for. It wasn't the result he wanted against France. We are revved up. We want to be brutal. We don't want to give them an inch to breathe. I'm sure we will see that in the performance at the weekend in all facets of the game, whether it is attack, running at them, picking people, targeting people, or defence, putting people down, sending them backwards, or in the scrum, maul and line out. We're coming for them. Talking like an MMA fighter here.
Lewis Ludlam was the guy who had the very nice shiner when he came off the bench at the weekend.
He's never set foot in Scotland, he says, but nice. He hates Scotland, absolutely hates the place.
It's a bit like you in Wales.
I've gone through Wales once, hated every second of it. Ludlam, we are emotionally there, they hate us and we hate them. We are going out at the weekend to get stuck into them, and they are going to do the same to us. So, they're turning up the heat again after, you know, letting that simmer last week and the saucepan blew up in their face.
The CVC deal, so £300 million for a 27% stake and the right for to commercialise or to exploit the commercial rights of the Six Nations, which means doing all the sponsorship deals and having all the bits and bobs, the accoutrements, making money off the back of that, basically. And then also the TV deals. I think everybody has still got a very old-fashioned view of TV deals where... If a match is not on terrestrial TV, you're missing this huge mass audience. But is that mass audience genuinely interested? Or is that just the only thing that's on TV at that point?
That's important though, isn't it?
Is it? Like, how important is it?
Like the passing fan. Like, sport should not just be for the hardcore fans who will pay for your Sky Sports
but
subscription.
Ultimately, how important... Like, what is that pass... What's the point of somebody who isn't actually genuinely interested, who's just like sitting there, couch potato, flick, 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 flick. I'm going to watch 10 minutes of this. Flick, flick. What's the value of that person?
Well, like, that's a very intangible thing to put on paper. Like, what? Like, are you talking about the wider appeal of the sport? Are you talking about the success
of the Premier League? Like, the Premier League went on Sky and it exploded. The darts isn't a bad example, right? Because the darts is this thing that they...
What about cricket, though, is another example.
Talking about cricket. Cricket seems to have made a massive comeback in the last 12 months where England got good. England, after years of being crap, got good, and suddenly it's absolutely everywhere.
So not good portions of last year's World Cup on free-to-air. Like, I was watching the World Cup final, and my mum was watching the World Cup final on Channel 4 before we went to watch Kerry Mayo in the Super 8s last year. That is the exact point. People who had no interest in a good portion of sport were suddenly talking about cricket. Of all, like, it had been completely in
the... To what end?
Like, this is the point.
What's the point of that?
Like, this is the question. Like, what... Like, are you looking for, like,
you're
a
spike? Going out and buying getting bats or getting the pads?
Are you looking for a spike in participation rates? Are you looking for people conversing about quicker rates? Like, to what end are you talking about?
So
like,
here's the thing. What boosts participation rates is actually...
But is that what you're looking for, participation rates?
I'm not saying that. I'm just let me finish at this point. What boosts participation rates has not been having stuff on TV. Generally, if we look at the Olympics, there isn't a surge. Always free to air. There isn't a massive surge in people joining.
What about
their
the Women's World Cup last year? We saw that in the paper yesterday.
Just let me finish, right? Because that's a one-off, and it's specific to a women's sport, which has been chronically underfunded for decades and decades and decades. So of course, there's room for those sports to grow. You take athletics. There is not a spike in people actually joining clubs because when you go and look to try and join a club, there's either no room or there's no coaches. So. Is a sport like rugby well set up to actually increase participation rates, if that's the criteria, by using the £300 million to employ a bunch of coaches?
Well, I'm asking
more
you,
than
is that
likely.
The criteria? Is that the criteria?
Well, you're the one who's saying that we need these passerby average sports fans who are sitting on their couch, flip, 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 flip. Like, otherwise, they're just empty eyes for the TV stations to sell ads to.
Does that not turn into actual people showing up at matches and paying for tickets?
Where's the evidence?
Like, where's the evidence for people showing up to the hardcore base showing up to cricket matches? Has that gone off the face of the earth, their attendances at matches?
I think that, like, the assumption that because cricket screwed up means everything is also going to screw up. Explain to me how darts got popular on terrestrial, with one terrestrial TV thing that everybody complains about.
It's a great point. Like with darts, it's almost you'd be scratching your head as to how this happened if you are using other examples. My point is that football will always survive because it is the most important sport in the world. It is the most popular sport in the world, and because the fact that a lot of people actually watch rugby and don't play it means it has this huge. We have this almost strange love affair with rugby in this country that everybody talks about it, everybody loves the game, and most people haven't picked up a rugby ball. So it's vastly different to football, where like basically every playground in Ireland is full of kids kicking a ball around.
That's
hugely different. These are not the same things.
Bear in mind, if you want to watch any match, like a Six Nations match, it's going to cost you a tenner. Essentially, it'll cost you a tenner and you can get it streamed to your TV. By the time this deal is finished, everybody's going to be able to stream that match onto their TV for tenner. Are we really saying that that's the end of rugby and that this is, it's such a fragile sport that the investment that the unions are going to get, which they presumably are going to invest in coaching and playing and facilities, is counterbalanced by the fact that average Joe and Josephine sitting on their couches are not actually watching the game?
Well, average Joe and Josephine may actually, after watching a game or two, get caught into the whole nationalistic aspect of the Six Nations.
And maybe they'll pay a tenner to get that.
Game comes to the Aviva Stadium, they might actually pay to go watch a game. They may be one of the people who are going up getting pints and not interested in the game, but they are putting money through the IRFU coffers. Maybe you'll say we don't want those people involved in the game.
I won't.
We're packing out the Aviva Stadium for a sport that a lot of people just haven't played. A lot of people in the Aviva Stadium have never picked up a rugby ball and are still there. They're still funding money to the organisation that is funding money into the grassroots, which I guess is your measurable thing.
The Aviva will sell out for rugby forever because the corporate tickets for the games.
Well, the corporate section will always be full.
Exactly. And for the Six Nations, now, November Internationals, maybe a different story. Probably a very different story.
I don't know, a lot of the November Internationals are behind a paywall now. I'd be very interested to see where this is in after 5 years of being behind a paywall, because we're not going to see.
It's a tenner to get a match.
We're not going to see this after 1 year. This could be like a stepping stone. There's talks this morning of potential one game behind a paywall and the rest free to air. That becomes two games the season after and three games. Yeah. And then eventually it becomes
There'll be one game every weekend which will be free to air.
I would be very interested in where the sport goes after 5 years of the Six Nations, and which basically is the last bit of rugby free to air, when that goes behind a paywall. I'd be very interested when the whole sport.
But they're not going to put everything. Unlikely they're going to put everything. There'll be one game every weekend. Now it might be Ireland France or it might be Ireland Italy, and not everybody's going to tune into that. But there'll be highlights programs, and anybody who's interested in it, who has a genuine interest in it,
the genuine fans are not going to be affected by this. No question about
that. They'll spend a tenner casual, people will more than happily spend a tenner to watch a sports event in the comfort of their home if the game is big enough.
And also, this may play into your point of view, there is a huge pub culture around the Six Nations. That obviously doesn't get affected by this, but
yeah, no.
I put value on Josephine and Joseph that have become now famous.
What we need to do is define how important those people are, because ultimately we're deciding public policy on the basis of people who don't really give a shit about sport, who just want to sit and be entertained for nothing at home.
The question is, it's going to happen. The home nations want to remove... They're against the idea of it becoming completely immune from pay-per-view.
Yeah, they are, but they also want to make sure that some of it is on free-to-air. So, we'll come back to this. 21 minutes past 8 this morning. Shot Clock is next. First, after his big win at the weekend, off the ball, caught up with Graham McDowell.
My favourite superhero would be Batman, of course. He's got all the toys, he's got all the cars, and... gets the girls too. That was awesome. Superpower, I guess teleport session will be great. We travel a lot on the golf tour. If I could get myself to Asia or Australia or somewhere in the world in an instant, I would save some time. Tattoos, no tattoos. Definitely not in the near future either. I'm not a tattoo kind of guy. My biggest fear, probably snakes, alligators, spiders, yikes. Biggest weakness, probably a cold beer. I just can't resist them.
You're very welcome along to this morning's Shot Clock, where we've got the big full forward Kieran Donaghy taking on the full back Gerard Gilroy this morning, as ever. Three topics of debate, changing up the scoring of the debate a little bit this morning. If you make a positive point, you will hear this sound. And if you make a really crap argument, you're going to hear this sound. So the scoring should get interesting a little bit later on. We've got three topics of debate, then we'll get into Kieran's free throw, and then into the picks, and we'll have last week's scores from the picks as well. If you've got any forfeit for the lads, whoever loses in the picks or the debates this year, tweet us at Off The Ball. Andrew McLaughlin last week was suggesting that the lads do some commentary topless, whoever loses, which I think is a fantastic shout. Right, let's get into topic number one, which is around the idea of judging people by the amount of medals they've won. So Michael Brick Walsh, who is here on the screen beside me, obviously hasn't got an All-Ireland medal. Are we judging his career by the fact that he's never won Liam McCarthy? Ger.
We in Irish sport place far too much store in the fact that you have to have got over the line to become a great. Now, so at the moment, everybody talks about Michael Brick Walsh as being one of the great hurlers of his generation. But in time, that's going to fade. The same way it did with Johnny Doyle, for example. No one talks about Johnny Doyle as one of the best footballers of the last 20 years, when clearly he was absolutely, at his peak, one of the best footballers over the last 20 years. But he gets completely forgotten about because Kildare didn't get over the line in 2010. Similarly, several of his teammates were similarly talented and are out of the conversation. It's just a stupid part about Irish sport where we measure things exclusively in medals.
Kieran.
Yeah, I kind of agree. It, like, the simple answer is medals should not define your career. I think there's moments that happen in Michael Brick Walsh's career, John Milan, there's a host of players from different sports that have iconic moments that will be always remembered by them, their fans, their family members, which will make them a legend in their own right in that town, county, team, province, whatever it is. Having an All-Ireland medal, having a national championship, whether it's the NBA or Super Bowl or anything, like, should not define your career. There's great players. You look at the NBA, you look at the Charles Barkley, the Patrick Ewings. Are you going to tell me that their career is not defined by them having a national championship, an NBA championship ring or a Super Bowl? They're absolute legends in their own right. It's a very tricky one, because when these players look back, like, you do everything to win an All-Ireland, obviously, as a player. It's what it's all about. And that's all you think about when you're playing. But for me, and certainly when you get to the end of your career and you start looking at things retrospectively, you start looking at the training sessions, the memories, the time spent, the teammates, the friendships, the bonds made. That's actually more important. But when you're a young guy and you're in the squad, all you can think about is that ultimate goal. And I think if players don't reach that ultimate goal, they will feel right then and there that it's not a success. But in time, they'll look back and they'll be happy with their
own. Would you have felt unfulfilled, though, if the first year you come in, you win Footballer of the Year, you win All-Ireland, and you go back-to-back, I think. So if you hadn't won any more than those two at the end, would you have felt that you didn't fulfil your potential because you only had two All-Irelands?
Yeah, but I think that's because of the team I was on. So I was very lucky to be from a county like Kerry that was very competitive, that had an unbelievable team. But if Kieran Donaghy was playing with a lesser team, people wouldn't necessarily have heard of me. I mightn't have won All-Irelands, but that should not have defined what I was about. The way I played the game, whether I played with Kerry or somebody else, the fact that I was playing with Kerry helped me win All-Irelands. Should that make me any better than guys that played with lesser counties that were much better footballers of me? I don't think so. I think there's the Matty Fords, there's countless guys that maybe didn't get over the line winning All-Ireland that were absolutely unbelievable players and legends in their own right, and not having a medal shouldn't define them.
You make the point about Barkley and a couple of the others. The thing about the NBA is that we can specifically register exactly how well those teams did, because we have stats that back up the quality of the performance, their shooting percentage, all that kind of stuff. We need to get to a point where Johnny Doyle's performances are like, they're standout. They were so sensational. He carried the team, and his leaping ability, all that kind of stuff. We need to just be able to quantify things a bit more in Irish sport, I suspect, as opposed to just the eye test. That lad had a good game today.
Yeah, but it's a bit trickier in Irish sport, because guys in the NBA, the Barclays, they could move, they could transfer, they could go to the Rockets and try and win a championship. They could go here to try and win a championship. Johnny Doyle started with Kildare, played 20 years, an absolutely unbelievable career. He didn't have the option to jump on board with somebody else that was more competitive to give himself a chance to win that championship. So it's a bit different. You look at the Premiership, you look at a guy like Gerrard, played an unbelievable career, never got there. If he'd have signed for Chelsea that time, he would have ended up with four Premierships.
Making me doubt myself. Stevie G, not as good as Kenny Dalglish because he couldn't drag the team over the line.
He slipped.
That's probably exactly. What cost him. He slipped over the line, which probably what cost him in the end. But it should not define him, because if he'd have gone to Chelsea or somebody like that, he would have won the leagues at that time. But I think his iconic status is even more so the fact that he stayed, and he stayed with the cause, and he tried to win it, and he just didn't get over the line. But he will be always remembered as an absolute icon in Liverpool.
I think in 10 years' time, he's going to come down as the recency bias changes. That this team of players who actually have started to win things with Liverpool, I think they're going to... Although he did obviously win a Champions League, so maybe...
Yeah, not that he win a Champions League. He actually put them on his back for about 10 minutes, like Roy Keane did out in Juventus.
Yeah, that is a lot of hot takes coming in there. We're nip and tuck so far. We'll get to the scores at the very end. We're moving on to rugby. Is this weekend last chance saloon for some of the Owl lads for Ireland? Of course, they got hammered by Wales last year. If they got hammered again this year, do we just accept that we're entering a period of transition, that we're not able to challenge for a championship right now? Kieran, you can lead us off on this one.
Yeah, I think, I think in Ireland, as Joe rightly said earlier on about GAA and championships, I think here we're also obsessed about retiring fellas as soon as they get to 30, or they're not good enough, or they're old, or they're over the line. I had it for the last 4 or 5 years of my career. I think the average age of the Irish squad currently is 26 and a half years. Four out of the Six Nations team have an average age of 26 years old. We're not old. We're the exact same as four of the other teams. You look at some of our starlets coming up, Robbie Henshaw, Jordan Larmour, 22, Henshaw, 26. We've got loads of players in that under bracket. You have your guys that are older. You have your Sexton, who's obviously an unbelievable leader, and he will continue to lead the team as a 34-year-old. But you have Conor Murray behind him, who's 30. Peter O'Mahony is still 29. All of these fellas are talked about because Ireland's form isn't great at the moment. We start looking at the easy thing. The easy thing is a few of these guys are older. Oh, let's push them on. Let's bring in some of the younger guys. Are the younger guys actually better players than these guys? I don't think so. You stick with your guys. You find out a way to get your form back. You find out a way to get your players playing better. That's up to Farrell and the management team. Stop looking for the easy option and start pointing at these fellas who are over the hill. It's like the same old story when a team loses in All-Ireland, loses a big game, they were tired, they were overtrained. All the simple, easy excuses that people pick when they're not actually the truth. The fact is the team didn't perform in the day, the other team were better, and that's what's happened to Ireland over the last few games. They're going to have to find a way to dig themselves out of it. Oof.
Argue against that?
Well, a couple of things. The best thing that happened to the Owl lads in the Ireland team at the moment was the fact that the World Cup draw is going to be made this November, and so every single match counts for World Cup seeding in the next 4 years. Suddenly, we're actually on a four-year cycle, and we should not be on a four-year cycle. It's far too early for us to be thinking about that. So the Owl lads should have one more stay of execution, and it is this Six Nations, and it is unfortunately going to end up being this November. But if, for example, Joey Carby had been fit, wouldn't we all be crying out for Joey Carby to be starting at out half? Look at what France did. They put a 20-year-old in at out half against England and they won. This guy is now going to be the absolute future of that team because he was given his head, a 23-year-old scrum half. And what a halfback partnership that in 4 years' time is going to be at their absolute peak. The French can build for a four-year cycle. I totally understand that because they are going to be hosting the World Cup and they need to get players in. We don't have a playing pool that big. But at the same time, if we weren't fighting for World Cup qualifying points, then this game for Peter O'Mahony this week and next week were going to be absolutely massive because he has to remind everybody that he's as good now as he was when he was captaining the Lions 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Last chance saloon, I think the last six unbelievable years
that Peter O'Mahony has been put in, let's call it spade a spade, he's been unbelievable for the last 6 or 7 years. The last few games or the last year, he hasn't been at that peak. Are we writing off what he's done? Like the World Cup is 2023. It's a long, long-term goal. We've 3 more Six Nations to go. We've a Lions tour to go. They've so much to play for in between then. I think you can certainly get guys in here or there, but you have to stay with your best guys. Your best guys are the guys that'll be on the field to win the game on Sunday. That's what Andy Farrell's picking. He can't pick guys because of a 4-year thing that's happening that far away. 2023 is too far away. You pick your team, the best team to go out and win on Saturday.
Right, okay. There is, I can tell you in the negative points, it's 3-1 against Kieran at the moment. So Joe's talking a little less shite at the moment, but Kieran might have a few more positive points to his name. We'll tally them up very shortly. This is a photograph of Andy Moran. Billy Joe Paddon was on Off the Ball on Monday night. He was talking about how Mayo footballers, if they're exceptionally gifted, tend to get brought away from the goal so they can get involved in more play. Are inside forwards born, not made, is the question. Andy Moran is one of the few who managed to slip through those cracks and managed to make it as an inside forward. Joe, do you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, so this is essentially the fact that the big and best and most successful counties in Ireland know that when you have a superstar, you stick him in the inside forward line. You think back to DJ Carey, you think back to Henry Shefflin. They didn't turn them into centre forwards. They didn't turn them into left half backs. They didn't say, oh, you need to go back there and see what the ball is going to be like going into the full forward line. They're like, you need to learn how to be tough. You need to learn how to win your own ball. You need to learn how to be at the end of a scoring move, and you need to be greedy. You need to develop a little bit of ego and actually turn into somebody who, when the game is on the line, we're going to go, it's your job to get us out of this. That's exactly why those counties, like Gooch, Gooch was never a centre forward, really. At the end, maybe.
That was a bad comparison there, though. Inside forwards are you can say that inside forwards
are just a corner forward the entire time. When he was at his absolute peak, he was 100%. Shut up.
He was a corner forward. He was a corner forward. And people say he was a born corner forward.
Maris Fitz.
Gooch, they were not born corner forwards. Maris Fitz was started as a half forward. He wasn't born a corner forward. Corner forwards are born because they go away and they're actually put the effort into their game. They're actually made. Corner forwards are made. The Peter Canavans, the Stevie McDonalds, the Cullum Coopers are made. Why are they made? Because they put in more effort than anybody else when they were young. They practiced harder when they were young. They were the go-to guys to. And that's important to tell kids that, because kids can't look at a Cullum Cooper or Peter Canavan and go, oh, these fellas are just born inside forwards. Every inside forward is actually made. You look at Bernard Brogan when he came on the scene, was a wing forward, and all of a sudden he was the main corner forward on a team that won the five in a row. So that's the whole thing about being born is just an easy thing to say. People are born to play the game is too easy to say. It's important to tell kids, to tell people that you can be that guy if you put in the effort. Cullum Cooper was the guy that was out kicking the ball every single day. He wasn't born to be a corner forward for Kerry. I think it's 80% that you're made and about 20% of it is you're born, and that's just athletic genetics that gets you to the point where you can make it to the elite level. That's the only thing I'd say now.
Look, I agree. 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. I absolutely 100% agree with that. But the point here is that Mayo have for too long took their best players and stuck them in at half forward, stuck them in the midfield, stuck them in the half back line because they want their half backs to be the players. Kerry and Kilkenny and Cork, when they see somebody who has talent, they're like, okay, absolutely, you're going to have to do the work, but you're going to be an inside forward because that's where you can do the most damage. For example, if Donegal had turned Michael Murphy into exclusively an inside forward and the entire county's reason for existence had been to get the ball to him in the full forward line, I suspect they would have won more All-Irelands than they've won.
I think the Michael Murphy point just sums it up. And plus, Ger, you're talking about football 20 years ago, 10 years ago versus football today. It's not as easy as just stick your guy inside. It's the last few years, it's very easy to say stick your guy inside and he's back with the blanket defence around him. He can't get any ball. Of course, teams had to look at getting their players out the pitch, but that's a different thing to players be either being born to be a corner forward, an inside forward or not.
Conor McManus started as a half-back at Monaghan. This is the disease that afflicts all of Gaelic football. Andy Moore was playing out the field when he started. Put your best players close to goal and tell them your job is to score. Your job is to learn how to deal. Get the guile to get a bit of space, get a bit of separation from the blanket defence. Your job is to be the killer on our team. Everybody's like, oh no, we're going to be a nice little halfback. I'm going to run onto the ball and a bit of space is going to be easy for me to be showy. It's hard. It's very hard to be Andy Moran.
I think McManus, the example of McManus is exactly my point about inside forwards are actually made more so than the barn, because McManus was obviously a solid enough forward when he was coming on the scene, but McManus is a guy who actually went and put in the hours and hours to be great. That's what he is now. He wasn't great when he came on the scene, because if he was, he wouldn't have come on at half-back. He would have been juggernauted straight into corner forward. They weren't exactly born with loads of forwards at that time, but I think he's a prime example of a guy that was made by himself in the lab.
Right, give him one more point there. I'm going to tally these up during the free throw. The free throw here is about
another
Irish basketball.
Fix.
do you want to have one more?
No, effort? No. Off you go. Go on.
But like, I mean, that the Gooch rampage on him not being a centre-forward could be the thing that costs you. I will top him up in just a moment. Irish basketball, obviously been a big week, Kieran. They've come out complaining, and I think a lot of people will get behind their complaints about not getting the funding when they badly needed it, especially when you look at what happened to the FAI this year. Let's look at this in the context of what's happened internationally for Ireland. I think it's fair to say that some of the international teams have underachieved, but that's because they've come from a place of not even having an international team due to some of the funding issues. What's your take on all of this?
Yeah, look, you know, the statement released by Basketball Ireland, you know, it had to be done. Firstly, I want to say, like everybody, I think, in the country, especially in Basketball Ireland, nobody wanted to see the FAI hung out to dry or go to the wall. That's obvious. Football in this country is just too important. It's a fabric of a lot of parts of the country, so you couldn't let something like that happen. I think people are... looking at this in Basketball Ireland as is unfair. They're right to say that. Granted, it was a different time. It was back in the recession of 2009. But for people in Basketball Ireland to be told when they had their mishaps, and their mishaps was the funding that they got, they were supposed to put it into buying stuff, getting venues up to scratch. They were putting it back into Irish teams to allow teams to be actually able to play at the highest level. That was their punishment. Their punishment was they had to pay back 1.5 million, their money to build a national stadium out in Tallaght to develop it more, improve it. That money was taken off them, $500,000, which was a huge blow to them at the time. I was on an Irish team when I was 15. My mother had to raise £1,000 for me. She sold lines in the hospital as a nurse. I'm sure she had all the nurses and doctors broke up inside there. Selling lines, I was walking around the towns, excuse me, getting out to people, getting out to everybody in my estates, trying to raise the money to get on the plane. And it was a real thing that if I didn't raise that money, I wouldn't have been able to play for that Irish team. I was the captain of the team, but if I didn't raise the money, I wouldn't have been able to be going. That's back in 98. So Basketball Ireland has been grossly underfunded, not in the last 10 years, but I would say in the last 30 or 40 years. The sport was massive in the 80s. It was great. It was on national TV, but still underfunded at the time. Everybody, the league was going so well because they funded it themselves. I think Kieran Shannon wrote a great piece yesterday. It's the third largest sport played in Ireland, participation-wise. It's number one in PE schools in Ireland. The new government, and when the new government comes in and looks at this, we have to support basketball as a sport in Ireland more. It gets nothing. That's the facts of it. It really gets so little on the ladder. You know, it's up to us in News Talk, and we've done a great job over the last year promoting the game inside here. But everybody has to promote the game. The games, the scorelines of the Super League teams have to be called out. Irish teams, and he wrote a great piece about Clare Rockall, that Irish team that came along the scene. Their team was pulled from underneath them. Just when they were coming to the stage where colleges could have been looking at them, it was a huge time in their careers. And Basketball Ireland had to fold everything. They had to double registrations. They had to find out a way to win money themselves, or to get money themselves, to keep the actual sport going. And that's why I think it's grossly unfair. Can they do anything about that? No. No. But the new government coming in can have a look at this and say, OK, Basketball Ireland took it on the chin badly, took a big knock. If it was a heavyweight fight, he would have been reeling, maybe falling down, maybe getting an A count. But they got back up. They've got the game back in a great place. It's a brilliant game for boys and girls to play. I can't... I had my own daughter, Lola Rose, down to the St. Brendan's Academy the last day, 4.5, about 40 kids inside in the hall. Such a great game, can always be played during the winter months. But we have to hope that the new government get on board, learn from the mistakes of the last government about the lack of funding, the lack of support that goes into it. The Irish team staying in hostels, having to pay for themselves, staying in people's houses. I stayed in Joey Boylan's house, my great coach at the time. He got his pizzas every night. That was one part of it. But kids now have to go up. They're staying, 7 or 8 kids are staying in people's houses. I think someone coming back in Kieran's article yesterday, someone's coming back and they tatted it up that it cost maybe 10 to 12 grand, not only to send their kid to an under 15 Irish team, but to go and watch them when they actually made the tournament. That's not on teams, Irish teams. If you're representing your country, you should be funded.
Well said. I think that concludes the free throw for this week. Back to the shot clock again, and the scores are in. You're not going to believe this. I thought it was a tie at one moment, but actually there has been a winner by just 1 point. Jer, you scored 7 points this week. You made 13 positive points, but you scored 6 in the negative column. Most of which came from that Gooch argument. Let's call a spade here. Kieran, you finished with 8. So Kieran takes the debate trophy home this week. You didn't score as many positive points as Jer, but you scored 2 less negative points.
Even though we didn't have the points last week, I still won last week as well.
You did it forward for like a wet week at the end of his career. You did start Leary's game. He started a corner forward. He killed him. He was at absolute peak as a corner forward.
I will say this, Kieran. You did put Robbie Henshaw into the coming up bracket. One of those young ones to watch.
He's 26.
Robbie Henshaw. So you lost points on that. Right, onto the picks. Last week's results from this, it was 2-2 in this last week. So we're going to give you 1 point if you get the correct outcome, and then 3 points if you manage to get the correct scoreline or margin of victory. Jer, you picked the Chiefs, you got the point for that. Kieran, you picked the 49ers. Jer and Kieran both predicted Ireland to win. None of them got the correct scoreline. And then Jer, you picked Mayo to beat Dublin by a point, which didn't happen. Kieran, you picked Dublin by 3. So 2-2 from the picks last week. This week, as we can see, Ireland against Wales. Kieran, who have you got?
I've got Wales, unfortunately. I think they're just in a better place at the moment. It wouldn't surprise me if Ireland nicked this one in a real tight game, but if I was to put my bet in and these punishments that are coming for myself or Jura, if we lose this at the end of the National League, I think is the first call. So I will go safe and go with Wales by between 4 and 7.
Give us an exact number.
29-23.
Sure.
Wales are going to win by 3 points, and the score, I didn't have a correct score for this one, but I'm going to go with 16-13.
Game of the weekend in the Allianz Football League is Donegal against Galway. Ger, who do you think is going to win this?
This is a good question. Where is it?
Letterkenny.
Okay, Donegal.
Yeah, Letterkenny.
I'm actually going to go with Galway. I think Galway should have won against Kerry last week. I think they have more impetus under a new manager to prove what happened last week was a bit of bad luck on their point of view. They should have been comfortable. They should have seen out the game. They made a few mistakes late, and you can't make mistakes against Kerry and Tralee with that crowd behind them. And I think Galway are going to go up with a point to prove this weekend and be a bit more desperate than Donegal.
Is this the battle to see who's actually number 3 and 4?
I would have thought
so, yeah.
In your power rankings?
They can win the bronze medal this weekend. It's all on the line.
The O&G power rankings.
This man, Odi Ighalo, we don't have a third match to look ahead to this weekend, so we're going to choose how many goals Odi Ighalo is going to score between now and the end of the season, over or under 4.5 goals, Kieran?
I think he'll be over. I think he'll actually get about 6 or 7. Just because he probably, like everybody that scores, everybody scores in their debut, so he's going to score in his debut. Get on that bit, firstly, and I think he's going to get a few more between now and the end of the season. Sure. So I'd say over.
I'm going under. I don't think that he's going to see as much game time as everybody thinks. I think that the notion that somehow he's going to fit seamlessly into this Man United team, having just come back from China, where, fair enough, he's banging in the goals, but like...
Nobody fits up front for this United team, really, bar Rashford, so...
That's the thing. I'm taking the under on this one.
I just think he'll get it because I think actually if they went away and spent 100 million on some great striker, he's a fellow who mightn't get 4.5 goals because that's the way it's worked out for United over the last number of years. So I think taking a punt in this lad is going to work.
All right, good stuff, lads. More from the Shot Clock, same time, same place next week. It is Thursday mornings, OTB AM. Check out youtube.com/offtheball and tweet us at offtheball for any topics you have. And again, some suggestions for the forfeit for the loser of the debate and the picks at the end of the season. Although I'm having Andrew McLaughlin's suggestion of topless commentating. Right, Kieran is sticking with us. Tom Malone is up next. Here is Niall Quinn talking about the Basketball Ireland statement this week.
My first reaction was my two nieces played for Ireland. I used to love coming back to Tala to watch them play. I like basketball. I played it once and got sent off in a school's match, so that was the end of it for me. I reached 6 fouls in 5 minutes and the Christian Brother didn't speak to me for about 2 years. So that's my basketball experience. But in truth to you, I believe it's not a contest. And I believe basketball, ourselves, all the other sports that are doing great things in this country should come together and have a lobby to get even more funding. I absolutely believe basketball should get more money. And I know they got treated very harshly way back when the Troika were in town. You know, it was a different landscape then. You know, the country was on its knees when all that happened. But I would be the first one to support anything they would put in place to you know, drive for more funding. I would do it for all sports. There is no... more, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm the association, there's no more us and them. I believe all our sports should have a forum. We should get together. We should power home the ability and the value of all sports in this country and get a better deal from government all round. So, you know, if Brenda wanted to come and see how we did things or if somebody else is doing stuff, that we could all share our knowledge and come at the political leaders who are talking a great game at the moment, and we were fortunate to get support in this time. But at the same time, there's far more to be understood about sport and to be gained by government support. And if Basketball Ireland get a big increase in funding, they'll get a pat on the back from me. Well done, you deserve it.
That's Niall Quinn defusing the row with Basketball Ireland. Right.
Yep, Tom. Start with football. Heung-min Sung scored a late penalty to send Spurs into the fifth round of the FA Cup last night. But Jose Mourinho's side are made to work against Southampton. It finished 3-2 at the new White Hart Lane. Shane Long scored the first goal for the Saints. And Danny Ings gave the Saints a 2-1 lead with 20 minutes left to play. Lucas Moura levelled things up with just 12 minutes left on the clock before Sun earned a penalty 4 minutes from time before converting himself. Tottenham do have some striking issues though. Without Harry Kane, Mourinho is hoping the team can cope with their striker shortage.
I don't know when Lucas and Son, they are going to finish the fuel. I don't know. So it's very difficult to progress the way we would like to progress. It's more like, let's build a team to give us a chance to compete in the next match.
Meanwhile, Celtic remain 7 points clear at the top of the Scottish Premiership after a 4-0 win away to Motherwell last night. Second place Rangers kept the pressure on with a 2-1 win at home to Hibernian. To stay in touch, Romanian Ioannis Hagi scored the winner in his first start for Rangers in the day. His dad, Georgie Hagi, turned 55. It was such a big day for birthdays yesterday in the football world. We had Cristiano Ronaldo. There was actually a whole hatful as well. Sven-Göran Eriksson. Januzaj as well, actually, just off the top of my head. But
right.
I think we ended up with at least seven footballers.
An interesting come down with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, Manchester United midfielder Scott McTominay says there's a good atmosphere around the club following the January transfer window. Bruno Hernandez and pay cut accepting Nigerian international Idion Igalo arrived at Old Trafford to boost Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side. McTominay told Sky Sports News earlier that the new arrivals have fitted in well.
First and foremost, the good people, and that's what we need at this football club. We need people who are good friends, obviously, can go out for dinner with everybody as well, and then what they bring onto the pitch is, we've seen that, and hopefully they can bring a lot for us, but first impressions are very, very good.
In Gaelic games, it was good news for Tyrone last night as senior footballer Colin McShane will be available for the rest of the league campaign and the championship this summer. The All-Star forward was set to move down under to play Aussie rules but will now stay in Ireland. The Adelaide Crows confirmed that in a statement McShane had decided not to make the move after a 10-day trial with the AFL club last month. While in rugby, Ireland continued their build-up to Saturday's Six Nations clash with Wales in Dublin. It's been reported that Gary Ringrose and Andrew Conway could be in line for new deals to stay in Ireland after James Ryan penned a 3-year central contract with the IRFU yesterday. While Charlie Ewells has been dropped from England's rugby union squad for Saturday's Six Nations clash with Scotland, the Bath second row started last weekend's opening defeat in Paris. Head coach Eddie Jones is already without Manu Tuilagi and Andrew Watson and will name his team this morning for that match at Murrayfield. Flanker Louis Ludum told Sky Sports News earlier they're prepared for a feisty encounter at Murrayfield.
They don't like us, we don't like them, and it's going to be a battle at the weekend, and I'm sure after the results of the weekend, both teams are going to come out fighting, both teams got something to prove.
You like to hear that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you want to hear that before an England-Scotland game. Yeah. And fresh from his win at the Saudi International, Graham McDowell is in the field for the Pebble Beach Pro, which gets underway later. Seamus Power and Padraig Harrington also in action in California. McDowell's also had his say on the welcome to the Distance Insights Project, a joint initiative by the USGA and the RNA to study the past, present and future impacts of distance in golf. McDowell worried about the impact of the game historically, including questioning the necessity to lengthen historic holes like the 17th at St Andrews and the 13th at Augusta. So overall, a pretty cerebral take on things. Dustin Johnson, meanwhile, former world number one and one of the longest hitters in the game, also had his say, bang on brand. He spoke to the Golf Channel's Randall Mell. Actually, you see the tweet up on screens right now. Yeah. So he saw the email, saw how long it was, didn't read it.
Bang on, Brad.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
It's a boy DJ.
Boy DJ, yeah. So one of the biggest hitters in the game, one of the people this report should impact potentially the most. Nah, I didn't read the email. And finally, in darts, the Premier League season gets underway tonight in Aberdeen. Highlight, of course, the repeat of this year's World Final. And Michael van Gerwen faces newly crowned world champion Peter Snakebite Wright. Also with the hockey, Derry's Daryl Gurney is up against Gary Anderson, and Gerwen Price takes on former champion Rob Cross. You going to Aberdeen, Ger?
Can't wait, Tom.
Yes,
DJ probably won't care really about the golf balls because, sure, if they're made, everybody else is going to go backwards as well. He's still the biggest and most powerful.
He's like 6'5". He can get
it. It's not about who's hitting it longer. It's just the courses are like St Andrews is becoming.
St Andrews with no wind is not a test for professional golf anymore.
No.
The lads were talking about this earlier, and they said that it's a lot of it has to do with physicality of the players. They're actually stronger, so that's one of the. It's not just the equipment because everybody's playing with the same balls and same equipment. So
if you look at Dustin Johnson physically, he can get to the top of his swing. The way he can turn his wrists around means the club can kind of get to almost that angle at the top of his swing. So plus he's like 6'5". So when you get that and core club speed and accuracy flowing through the ball, it's like a monstrous whip.
Yeah, but you see even like guys like McIlroy who aren't massive in stature, but they're just strong. Their core is strong. The speed they're getting through the ball.
You see his workout videos. He pops on Instagram and stuff. He is incredibly strong.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff, Tom. Thanks for that. We're previewing the weekend's Gaelic football next here on OTBM with Kieran. Owen's going to be back in the studio as well. What changes, though, would players and managers in women's football like to see in the coming years? Here's MT asking a collection of inter-county stars and coaches. Have a look.
Gosh, I know they are doing a very good job at the minute, but I think I would really enforce the whole notion of well-being in the clubs now, and especially with the county teams as well. Definitely put more supports in place for that. And, you know, if you did have three magic wishes, you know, obviously, you know, with more funding, I think you could really roll out the well-being and make sure that everyone had sort of access to a peer within their own county that they could have support from as well.
Obviously the numbers have grown at games, but I would say that maybe just give everybody extra free tickets to make sure that the stadium was full run out. As I say, obviously it's an amazing number already what we have going to the Ireland finals, but it just must be a bit extra special for the lads when they're running out and the pitch is full.
I think it's about getting better coverage for the games that have been going on in the league and the championship. You know, it's all right getting it for the All-Ireland final, and I know they are trying to promote the game a lot better, but for me personally, I'd love to see bigger crowds at every game.
I would probably I suppose from the Camogie and football side of things, there's a lot of clashes, so I suppose if I could work something out there that they're like the girls would be encouraged to be able to play both codes with no clashes, that would be something that I'd probably look at doing. Easier said than done, though.
I might look at maybe getting teams into Croke Park a bit before the All-Ireland final, which they have started doing. So,
I suppose that one of the first things is kind of just get a bit more for the players, like, you know, maybe expenses, travel expenses possibly, just kind of, you know, a bit more fairness between men's and women's football. I wouldn't necessarily throw anything out. I think it's all going well.
A lot of girls are going to Australia at the minute, and maybe if they had more to kind of incline them to stay home here in Ireland, that's probably something that I might focus on. And probably in general, I suppose local ladies footballers in general are kind of crying out for expense and stuff like that, and probably that's something I'd probably focus in on, really.
Yeah, I'd bring the association immediately across the road and join forces with the men.
Well, funnily enough, that's going to be exactly my next question, which is, do you think are they better off in or out, and why?
This whole, you know, twinning up of games and double headers and that, you know, trying to put it on somewhat of an equal footing, and we use the term fair rather than equal or fair, you know, equality. But I don't ever see the day that this is going to work unless it's under the same umbrella.
I clear up the inconsistency with the contact, the tackle. I think it's just, you know, some refs are very leaning down it more or not, and I suppose that's just frustrating for us.
Mark Trostany Kelly there with a collection of players and managers ahead of the start of the LGFA season, properly talking about the changes that they'd like to see to the game. Now let's turn our attention back to Gaelic football. A big story breaking overnight is that Colm McShane is staying at home. This obviously changes where Tyrone sit within the landscape. It completely transforms Tyrone from being, we were talking about them as also-rans, like maybe the fifth or sixth or seventh best team in the country, to they got belief back now.
Yeah, they do, and so they should. If you think back to the game against Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final last year, like, they were, didn't look good for Kerry at half-time in that game.
McShane was killing
them. Killing them, and we weren't functioning well, and that can happen against Tyrone, because they're good at getting bodies back and they're good at playing that health defence, which makes it hard for individuals to really shine. I think Tommy made a big difference when he came on that day, Tommy Walsh. But, like, rightly so, they should be saying, no, okay, let's go. Kyle Coney's playing good football for them. He's a kind of plus outside there. And look, McShane, you just put him straight back in at 14 and all of a sudden you've got a great focal point. They're also saying the marker's in this year.
Yeah.
We thought we were going to lose him to Australia. Let's use him for why maybe they looked at getting him down there, because he's so good at getting out in front. And look, we argued about it on Shot Clock last week, but if the rule stays the same, it doesn't have to be up here, it doesn't have to be the skyscraper of a catch, which is what we were kind of hoping it would be for. It's about getting out in front and having good kickers out the field, and they have Coney and McCurry, they have good kickers that can deliver a good ball out there, so they will be rightly delighted and rightly so feel like they're back in the race to be contenders.
Before the news broke that he's staying around, we were like, they're going to have to rush Matty Donnelly back from the hamstring he ripped off the bone. That's going to be their main attacking thrust. They were trying stuff with Enda McGinley, and I was saying, he was like, look, you know, they're trying stuff, but the lads that they're trying it with just aren't Colm McShane level, and no one can expect him to be, because he was the best full forward in the country last year. So it's a transformative moment for them that
Can they get close to Dublin? Like, is there any way that they can, like, realistically feel like now with McShane back in the team? What can they do over the next 4 months to go into the championship season going, look, we've got a crack this year?
I think you use your best guy and figure out what's the best way to use him. And, you know, Dublin have good players in the full back line, but I still think McShane on his day gives anybody huge problems. So if they can find a way to get good ball into him, he's an excellent kicker. If he can get two or three marks a game, it's an automatic 3 points. If he can get a few dangerous balls where he gets him on the bounce and he can go take, he's very good at taking on his men. He's powerful. So you figure out one how to get. Look, Donnelly's a big one. You know, you need Donnelly going well. How well he comes back from that injury? Do they try and tailor his role? Do they say, okay, maybe he's lost a bit of his explosiveness? Do you put him to the middle of the field? Like Matty Donnelly would be unbelievable in the middle of the field as a good tracker, good tackler, smart guy, knows where to be, can carry the ball up the pitch. Yeah, he mightn't be able to have that explosiveness where he's going to leave people for dead and kick points, but he can still kick points on the loop. He can still come on late and kick points. He is an inspirational player for them. So how they tweak that balance is important. You know, how they evolve their defensive system and maybe tweak that a bit, because it obviously didn't work against Dublin in 18. And, you know, they had to figure out a more, kind of like what Galway are trying to do at the moment and what Donegal did really well last year. Donegal went from a really kind of defensive team to all of a sudden this kind of expansive counter-attacking team still, but they definitely kept more people up front. They definitely went away from the complete blanket. So maybe Tyrone, if they tweak that a bit, will Mickey Hart do that? Will he go with something like that? That he's
probably not.
Probably not at this stage because he sticks to what he knows.
There was a change last year, but the point when we were talking about it on Friday was that they were reverting back to the old game plan because McShane wasn't there. It was like, oh, look, what can we do now? We've lost our best player. All of a sudden that changes again and they can have a rethink. This has the potential for that to be transformative. He's that good.
Yeah, he is. They have to really work on it. And look, they haven't had him for the last number of weeks. Obviously, he's been down there, but they have loads of time to work into the small bit through the league and then that break from league to championship to try and figure out, okay, how do we get the most out of this guy and how can this guy be a match winner? Because, you know, last year he was unplayable, and if he's at that level again, and there's no reason to say why he won't, if not even improving, because there's two things that can happen. The confidence that he can get from last year will catapult him to another level again.
Yeah.
Our teams now are actually so honed in on him that they're planning against him, and that he actually finds it harder and that he gets frustrated in games. Inside, full forward is the most frustrating position in the world to play. You have to be so patient. And you see a lot of fellas that can't hack it in their patience-wise. They say, oh, I can't do, I got to go out and get on easy ball and get hand passes and play the game.
Yeah, except the point you were making last week feeds in perfectly to this. If he feels that way, he can make a loop run to somewhere near the 40 and they just need to ping it over to him and he's going to get a score, right?
Yeah.
And you've got to assume that they're working, because he is such a good kicker,
yeah,
that they're working on runs for him to get 4 or 5 of those a game.
Exactly. And like the whole argument we had as well last week about that, it doesn't even have to be forward, it can be just across.
Yeah.
A fella can be a yard outside the 45 and a yard inside the 45, once or 20 yards apart. And I think when a fella's on the 45 and you're looking at him and you're marking him and he's looking up,
you're defending back that way.
Yeah, you're kind of more worried about what's in here. You're not really worried, and like teams will be dropping weak side to get bodies back. Like that is a one. We got caught with one. Carlo, I'm sure Pat Critchley had worked on it, but it was very good the way he'd done it. We forced them down one side. They'd come back out. We'd done everything right. We were pushing back out of the ball. We'd do weak side, half hour dropping. But they kicked that little crossfield pass to a fella that was wide open. Do you know what I mean? Because in the old rules, that guy wasn't a danger at all. He was kind of like...
Yeah, you could stay out there all day.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. But he was a danger. This guy caught the ball, marked it and kicked a raker of a point from 40 yards. And, you know, it was in that moment I goes, jeez, this mark could be something that, you know, look, I said last week it needs to be tweaked. Is there anything going to be done? I think Congress has to do that. That we can't just say, oh, we're going to change it, or we're going to tweak it, or we're going to kill it altogether. But yeah, look, it'll be interesting what they do, what the Tyrone team do. But look, what they're going to get, what's guaranteed that they're going to get out of this news is a huge bolt of confidence. And everyone in that squad who was deflated a number of weeks ago saying, this guy's going to be down in Adelaide, he's gone. Or maybe all along this was just something for McShane where it was a free holiday for 3 weeks and go down for a bit of a trial and enjoy the sunshine and
not have to do the hard slog of winter training and you come back.
Exactly,
like,
but they will definitely get a lift as a squad.
Well.
Like, just a couple of things there. The Donegal example, I think, is a good one, but they had Declan Bonner brought in 2 years ago, Stephen Rochford brought in last year. There is no real management change in Tyrone. In fact, they've lost their strength and conditioning coach. And I would say that management-wise, they've regressed.
They lost Stephen O'Neill, didn't they?
They've lost Stephen O'Neill, sorry. What am I talking about? So, like, that would suggest even more, if, like, Stephen O'Neill's press to be believed, that they've regressed definitely in that department. And then I just wonder if there is enough change there to actually take them to the next level. I accept that they can get their way into a semi-final, but there's almost a pressure now on Mickey Hart to go and replicate what they did last year and to go one step further. That almost if he didn't have McShane last year and snuck into, or this year, and snuck into a semi-final, people would be like, Mickey Hart still got it. Mm-hmm. Whereas now this actually puts the pressure right back on him to go and somehow eke out, I don't know what their own fans expect, but they probably hope for an All-Ireland win at some stage.
They want to get somebody into a final and they want to have a crack off them. And that's literally all you have to do as a Tyrone guy. If you look at that game against Kerry, Jesus, we were worried last year at halftime. Like, I was up in the studio with Peter Kenevan with Sky Sports and he was just grinning from cheek to cheek. It was the real kind of, it was the old Tyrone team. Like, we're frustrating them, we're starting to crack them, they're going to fold. And Kerry just said no after half time and came out and took it back. But there was a key sequence in that game, if you remember, where Tyrone were on the attack, the extra pass was on, it was a bad pass, badly executed, it was intercepted, Stephen O'Brien got it, Gainey, backdoor O'Brien, goal.
Yeah.
That key was the difference between putting Tyrone up 4 or 5 or Kerry getting back level or back behind, back. I think it was back level. So they would have been down 4, now they were level in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And if you go 4 down against a team like Tyrone, it's going to be hard. And they'll be hoping they get a crack off of these teams again, they get back into a semi-final, find a bit of magic and get somebody on a wet day where they try and frustrate them. And McShane is the game of his life and gets 1-7 and Tyrone win the All-Ireland. That is not inconceivable.
No.
So as a squad, they will be. That's what they have to cling to. They can't cling to the fact that they have the Canavans and the Mulligans and the Stephen O'Neills. And we get up there, we'll be defensive. We've got the three best forwards in the game. We get it up to them. That's Dublin and Kerry now with them forwards. But Tyrone have won, not been the best team before.
Yeah. I mean, no, they haven't. They were definitely the best team of that decade.
In 08. 08, hold on.
What are you talking about?
Stop.
You know, best team of the decade. She even admitted it when you went where I see. Come here, they've added Kevin Madden and Johnny Davis to their backroom team. Johnny Davis is the strength and conditioning. Kevin Madden is the ex Antrim footballer who was a heavy scoring forward in his time, I think. So I think there will be fresh voices there. That's that point. Let's move on. You want to talk about the Seamus Moynihan comments saying that there should be pay for that Australian clubs should compensate. Somewhere in the GAA. So we were trying to work this out exactly. What part of the GAA would get the compensation? Would it be the club? And if it is direct to the club, might the club blow it on an outside manager? You know, or should it go to a coach who is, you know, part funded by the provincial body? Like, is there some way?
Club facilities, maybe.
Maybe automatic. Like
the team could give them something to. Do something in the club.
Yeah, so these floodlights
or the artificial
rooms,
pitch.
Like, yeah.
Artificial training pitch. Area.
If only you know anybody who might be able to supply them at one.
I'll sort it out. But yeah, no, like that's the only, like going back into, you're right, you don't want it going back and being misspent on, you know, whatever. But facilities for GAA clubs, you know, I'm thinking about Mark O'Connor going out with Dingle or Ty Kennelly going with the Stole. You know, they could have done with a bolt of cash to go back in. It goes back into the kids, it goes back into whatever they can do to improve the club, to entice more kids down to play, whether that be floodlights or whatever. But it's about the guys that have spent the generations getting Mark O'Connor to a point that they're doing that almost in a way for Dingle. They're doing it for the kid, but they're doing it for Dingle. Hopefully he'll win a county championship with Dingle when he's older. Hopefully he'll go on and win All-Irelands with Kerry. And then that's just snatched by some crowd over in Australia that come with the bucks and take him. So on a free transfer, which is what it is really.
Yeah.
So maybe something that goes back in where they can feel not like so hard done by. Like Dingle are trying to win a county championship. They're a really good team. They've been knocking on the doors. And if they have Mark O'Connor, they probably have a championship within the last 2 or 3 years. Mark O'Connor is a possible Kerry captain. Paul Gainey could get the captain Kerry. There's a lot of ramifications for them losing Mark O'Connor. And Mark knows that. You know, Mark, I'm sure Mark comes back every winter and is kind of sitting there watching county championship games. like I used to feel watching basketball games when Stacks were playing or when Kerry were playing or when I couldn't, that thing about being your heartstrings being torn that you can't help your boys. Mark O'Connor grew up with these lads, won Hogan Cups, won minors with Kerry, and now he's to go around with a water bottle on the sideline and watch them lose county semi-finals or county finals. Seafield is absolutely heartbroken in the dressing room. If Dingle were able to keep producing these young players and put it back into facilities, I don't think there's any problem with it. I said that, I don't know that I tweeted or something a few months ago, but I said the same, that there should be something that makes it not as easy for these Aussies just to say, oh, we'll take Ger Gilroy and we'll try him for 2 years, he doesn't work it, he get injured, go back. There has to be real thought into, can this guy be the next Mark O'Connor? Because there's a lot of guys going down there and, you know, there still is, like, I'd love to know the percentage of fellas that are making it, the Zach Toohey's, the Mark O'Connor's, the Ty Kinnelly's.
Very
few. Yeah, there's still a lot of them out there that you know, Begley had a great career with the Lions. There's a lot of them out there that do well, but how many are we not really hearing about that go out and just come back within that year? You know, there's a lot of them,
most of them, definitely most of them.
Yeah,
yeah, like that all makes a whole heap of sense. Ty Kinnelly was on, was it before Christmas, just after Christmas, and he said that he'd done a deal with the CEO of the AFL that there would be compensation, but that the GA at the time had turned it down because you can't put a value on the player if the player is amateur. It would have been in breach of their amateur status. Maybe it's time to revisit that. Exactly. And that this isn't payment for the player, that it is recognition of the development of something.
The hours spent putting in to get the player to the level where they're at, that they're good enough to go down to Australia and pick up a new game and go play.
I understood why the GAA were doing that, because it suddenly opens up, you know, the GPA come in, the provincial council comes in, the county board comes in and says, but that player got good at development squads when we invested in strength and conditioning and nutrition and facilities. And the club is like, well, how much are we getting? So like,
the club nurtured the love though and the talent for that guy to get there. If that guy wasn't been looked after since he's 5 years old, blowing Saturday mornings, getting his Coke and Tatoes and falling in love with the sport and the game, he never gets to the development squads. You know, it is the club that gets you there. It's the club that always is the root of everything. So if a guy gets taken, I can't see why some sponsorship deal can't be done, that the Adelaide Crows can't be on the front of Dingle's jersey. I don't give a shit. But if they got 50k to put back into getting floodlights in their training pitch, they'd be delighted.
Yeah, no, you're dead right. Okay, so let's talk about some of the games this weekend. Dublin against Monaghan is on Saturday night. We'll talk as well about Armand Kildare in a couple of minutes' time. The games in Division 2 are pretty interesting. Dublin against Monaghan on Saturday night. Dublin have started the league quite well, despite the fact that it's first game out, everybody recognised the team. Second game out, it was like, oh, significant changes here. They're rolling at the moment.
They're rolling. They're unearthing new diamonds all the time. I thought McHugh was very good. It's amazing because it's these guys are coming in, these younger guys are coming into this team and like they're just surrounded by class. And you know, if these young lads were coming into teams that, you know, didn't have that, they mightn't be excelling like they are, but they're just coming in with so much confidence. The other guys are causing so much problems with their power runs. These guys are getting on the back of it. They're getting confidence on the back of seeing that around them. They're able to go forward and take their own chances. And yeah, look, they're in an absolutely unbelievable place. And, you know, Monaghan had beaten him the last 3 years in a row. The one above in Clonus last year was a good game, was a close game. Stephen O'Hanlon, the basketball player, came on and swung the game dramatically in Monaghan's favour. But Monaghan had a great win against Tyrone last week, but I just think the weekend will be a step too far. And I think Dublin are looking at, I'd say this group are looking at maybe getting to another league final and half hoping Kerry get through and having another crack off them again. I think this Dublin team want to get a hold of Kerry and try and give him one of those beatings again to remind him that they're that much better. They haven't been able to do that the last number of years, and I think it's bugging them a bit, and they'll want that. And you know, I'm sure Kerry want another crack as well.
Just on the diamonds coming through, so I was just looking at TJ Reid there. I remember came off the bench in that game against Waterford and scored 5 points in his first five possessions, and the previous year he'd been on the bench for the All-Ireland final against Limerick, where it was the September of the year that Ballyhale had won a club final where he'd scored 2-2 in the club final. So that's the level of player that you had to be to get into that greatest Kilkenny team that was the greatest hurling team of all time. Imagine how good you need to be impressing and training at the moment for the Dubs. And so if there is somebody who's getting a chance, they are going to be very good.
Yeah. They're earning it.
What if this is a year where Dublin do a 2018 on it and
blitz
everyone, by everybody again? Like, what if they do get Kerry in a league final and then hammer them in a league final? Doesn't exactly leave you, it doesn't whet the appetite that much for the summer. It does, like a...
Well, let's get into Kerry's defence then, because that's the one thing that would... their forwards will hold... Mm. If it's a shootout, their forwards are going to be into it, right? And they're going to be able to bear comparison over 80 minutes or however long that final is. But is the defence good enough? Is the Kerry defence good enough?
I think when you peel back a layer of Kerry, and it's not just the defence... they're not able to go toe-to-toe with Dublin. You have to say that they need to pray for fitness in so many departments. And now, when it comes to the forwards, that's just because they've got generational talents, and every team who has generational talents can't do that. In midfield, it's fairly obvious. When David Moore's not there, they're not as good in midfield. And I would say that Shane Ryan needs to stay fit as a goalkeeper. So you get to the six forwards. They're missing Tadhg Morley and Tom O'Sullivan last week. And they were in big trouble. It's as simple as that. Yeah, in my opinion, they're two best man markers. So, like, it's a double whammy. You have Gavin Crowley coming back from the half-back line to mark Shane Walsh, which is taking away what he can do going forward, which I think he's brilliant going forward, and he's just not as good as an inside marker as O'Sullivan and Morley are. That if they get injuries to those two lads or in the backs department, I think they're in trouble. But do they need to come up with something, Kieran, as a fail-safe? That, like, when they did bring Paul Murphy back as a sweeper last year, it didn't always work. I don't think it was as bad as some people thought against Tyrone last year, for example. I thought that their MO was to stop goals, and they effectively did that. They let McShane have his points. That I just wonder, did last week send alarm bells ringing that, right, if O'Sullivan and Morley are injured, we're not going to be able to handle these calibre of forwards?
It's a good point. Look, Kerry can't afford to lose those guys.
No.
You know, I think if you did have two of those guys out come the main business time of the year, you'd be in trouble. Maybe you'd be forced into looking at a more kind of team defence approach. I think they really went man to man last year, and I think it worked in a lot of aspects, and I think there's a huge amount to take out of it, and Peter Keane did a great job bringing in that real man to man stuff. Fellas were going out after men, but it also caught them a few times, even with the goals in the final. Con Callaghan did dummy runs, and Tom Sullivan was drilled to mark him and went out after him, and, you know, guys were coming through the middle. So I think there might have to be a look at, you know, having the absolute desire to be a man marker, and that's what Kerry did really well last year, and it served us, and it nearly stopped the five in a row. Don't forget that. But just to cover, as Owen's point made, if you lose one of those guys through injury and you can't do that, and say it happens in a semi-final, you lose one of these guys to injury, or you lose them in the Super 8s. If you lose a guy in the Super 8s now to a hamstring tear, he's going to miss the rest of the championship,
yeah,
possibly. So you have to maybe have some kind of other format looked at that is, you know, that it's a bit more team-orientated, maybe it's a bit more defensive, maybe you play, of course you can play in the counter-attack with the likes of Clifford, Stephen O'Brien and Paul Gainey as your three inside forwards, and just go with that and play them in a straight line, you know, down the middle of the field, so they can break out either side and get everybody else back and play a defensive type of game. Because, you know, as Owen rightly says, if you lose two or three of them, no, Crowley will be back.
That's a big issue,
you know, where he is when he comes back, but I know him and I know how dedicated he is, and he will have done everything right to get back to that peak, and he'll be a huge addition to that back line. If you could throw him in and back on top of the six backs that we had there last year, now there's fierce competition for places. Somebody's going to be pissed off losing out, and they get better.
Am I wrong that he is actually a prototype sweeper if you need him?
I was just thinking that when you said it. Like definitely, he definitely has the brain and the athleticism to kind of burst forward. And
physicality to make sure that no one's going to come running.
He's a dog as well, though. Like, you know, and I mean that in the best sense of it, he's a dog, and you want your dog in somebody's face, and Crowley's as good as doing that as anybody.
Can I coming off the back of the NFL season, right, the best defences do a little bit of everything. And they mix it up in the middle of a game, and they mix it up before the play happens. So, like, couldn't he be a sweeper for a part of a game and also a dog for a part of a game? And you just have, like, there's just a little bit of communication where it's like, okay, at the moment, I am the sweeper. I'm the mic. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to do this.
Start of the game against Dublin, for example, stop that early onslaught that tends to happen.
Or maybe the start of the game, you put him on Kieran Kilkenny, and he's absolutely in Kieran Kilkenny's face for the first 25 minutes. And at that point, you go, okay, right, this bit, we've got him now. We know exactly what he's going to do. We put somebody else on him. I'm going to go back and just sweep for 15 minutes. Or the start for the throw-in, for example. Like, to just
be... it's a great point you're making, Jern. That's the way the game is going, and that's what you're going to have. You're going to have teams that'll be in the middle of a game or from a kick out, there'll be a call, and they'll go back into a defensive zone shape, and they'll actually know that when they're in this zone, the idea is that we're going to, you know, if you go out in the first 10 minutes and you're man to man and everybody's singled out and you're up, you know, you're really at fellas, and then from a kick out, the runner comes in and makes a call, and your team goes into defensive structure, and you're in that defensive structure knowing that when you get your turnover, because they'll come down, it happens in basketball, you come down the court in basketball and you're used to man-to-man and you're running all your sets, then you come down, the team throws a 1-3-1 at you. For a few minutes, you kind of don't know what to do. You're passing the ball around. What are they doing? Where are they? Why am I free? Where's my man gone? Why has he gone back there now? And then you switch it back up again 10 minutes later. He's back out, hopping off you again. That's keeping a forward, thinking it's keeping the team, thinking it's keeping the team on edge, it's keeping the team not knowing all the time what they're facing. And I think it's certainly something teams could look at, and it's probably the next level, and it's probably, you know, I don't know how far it is away where teams get to that level where they're actually switching defences in-game to keep the opposition on their toes and not let them set on one way they're playing. So if they're playing against them a mass zone, that they, you know, keep the ball out wide and they'll force you to come out. But if you're switching it up, I think it certainly does give you options. And, you know, I think...
Are teams doing that, do you think? Are we seeing that?
I would say... I don't know if teams have got to that yet. I think there's certainly... I think Dublin are the closest to it. And I think they've, you know, they've got their... You know, they've got their clear tactical calls. One is the fist up that we've talked about. That's the obvious one, but... Is there little nuances that they have or that they go to at times? There is. Are they just, you know, that example that we keep going back to last year about Cluxton coming out and marking?
Yeah.
You know, are there calls for these things? Is it just that they've done them so much in training that they know when that scenario arrives that they do it? But, you know, like if a team is losing a point, are they not in the full pitch press?
Yeah,
is everybody not up inside the 45 on a kick out kind of going?
That's all offensive. Like the defensive conversations that we've all been having is like, get bodies back, and you know, your sweepers need to be active and they need to make themselves busy. But is that as complicated as defending has got?
I would think so. I think Dublin have very started this pushing teams down the sideline down, and I think that's something that's going to catch on, using the sideline like you would in basketball as your friend. I would say Mark Ingle might have had a lot to do with that, trapping from behind, sending a fella down the line and the second guy coming from behind. So when you get him going down the line, he starts getting confident, he's looking up, and then there's nothing on, he turns around, and when he turns around, that second guy is coming from behind on the trap. So they are you know, they are very dynamic defensively, I would say, Dublin, and have. And also, that's backed up with having unbelievable backs. So it's the best of both worlds.
Okay, we didn't talk about the games in Division 2. The other games this weekend, so Dublin versus Monaghan Saturday night. Donegal against Galway, we talked about in Shot Clock a little bit earlier on. Meath against Mayo. Meath are struggling a bit at the minute. They need to get a win there.
Yeah, it's on in Meath, so that'll be massive to get a win. There's a few big games. Yeah, there's other games. The big games in Division 2 were very interesting as well.
Tyrone against Kerry, obviously. That's going to be interesting. What's going to happen? Why didn't we call that one? It was a good third game this week. You didn't want to.
Yeah, Igallo, we have to wait. Wait 4 months for this point to figure out.
It's all about the slow burn on the Shot Clock. I guess we didn't think that it would be like, is Colin McShane going to play this weekend?
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah,
of course he is.
He's not going to be on the touchline or the terrace like he was last time.
Just straight in, yeah. That changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the emotion lift that will give the fans and the whole of Tyrone above in Healy Park. It's a tough place to go.
Armagh against Kildare, Westmeath against Fermanagh, Laois against Cavan, and Roscommon against Clare. Armagh against Kildare is live on the telly as well, so. Chance to see some Division 2 football. Right, it is 9:18 a.m. this morning. It's time for Virtual Insanity.
I'm wearing a golf jumper. My name is John Duggan, and this is Virtual Insanity, our PGA Tour slot every Thursday. We're trying to make a bit of money over the year with virtual money spent on virtual golfers. Actually, they're real golfers. I digress, real golfers. So they're playing tomorrow at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. This is in California. Three courses used for the week, two at Pebble Beach, two at the Rands, iconic course, US Open venue, Spyglass Hill and Monterey Bay as well. So a lovely vistas. Clint Eastwood, I think, has got a house up there. I think he was a mayor of a town, Carmel, at one stage. All these kind of interesting landscapes. And you want to be there on a Sunday night when you're in Dublin or in Cork or Limerick or wherever in the rain and that kind of thing. But you're not. So you'll have to just bear with us and watch the golf on the Sunday night. So last week, I kind of had Webb Simpson in my head at 14-1. Didn't pick him in the end, and then he won. So I don't really feel him that far off. Tony Finau, who he tipped the week before, ended up in a playoff. But a bad week at the Phoenix Open. Let's try and rectify that this week. But it's all about patience. It's all about keeping the faith in yourself, believing in yourself. I might be the last person to believe in this, but I still believe we can get winners here. So about this week's tips, here we go. Okay. Pebble Beach Pro-Am, Jason Day, 20-1 for 4 each way. Jason Day, actually, he's come in since I spoke, 18-1. They've cut him. I'm only joking. I didn't move the market. He actually is 18-1, Jason Day, for 4 each way in this Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Had back problems, Jason Day, right? But he's finished in the top 5 in the last 3 years in this tournament. Last time out, he was in the top 20 of the Farmers Insurance Open. I think he's coming back into form. 12 wins on the PGA Tour. Was number one in the world at one stage. Jason Day, I think, will be back there. We're all about the wilderness this week. It's wilderness week on Virtual Insanity. Jason Day, I like him at a course he likes to get back in the winner's enclosure at 18-1, Jason Day. Second guy, also wilderness man, Jordan Spieth. Remember him, Jordan Spieth, the next blockbuster guy of golf. 11 wins on tour, including the Masters, the US Open, the Open Championship of Birkdale in 2017. He hasn't won since then. Can you believe it? You can probably believe it the way he hits the ball, but he's getting back into form with the ball striking. I know he missed the cut in Phoenix, but he's happier with his game. And I think for a guy who has the X factor at 40-1 in a tournament he won by 4 shots in 2017, I think Jordan Spieth, you're taking a chance. He still might be out of form, out of sync. But if he comes back into form, a previous winner at 40-1 for 3 each way, Jordan Spieth, I think is a tasty price at 40-1. Finally, a player in form, Max Homa. Twice in the top 10 the last two events. Contended in Phoenix last weekend, so he's in nice, rude health, Max Homa. 10th here last year at the Pebble Beach. And also, when he wasn't playing very well on tour, he did finish well at Pebble Beach. So he likes the track. He likes these three courses they're playing on this week. Also won last year at the Wells Fargo. A win under his belt, Max Homa. So he's my third selection this week. So gamble responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford. We're going 8 places with bookmakers like Paddy Power, Ball Sports, Betfair and Sky Bet this week. 8 places. You've got to shop around for good value with a fifth of the odds. The three golfers for Virtual Insanity this week are the Wilderness Boys, Jason Day, 4 each way, 18-1. Jordan Spieth, 3 each way, 40-1. And Max Homa, the American, 3 each way at 50-1. Overall pot, 934. We'll get that back over a grand, hopefully this week. Good luck on Virtual Insanity. OTB
AM. I would delve firstly into the psychology of English sport. And Keith played at Harlequins for many years, and we've had a couple of chats about the English psychology coming to Ireland. But I just see it time and time and time again, right across English sport, that when they get some success, they talk themselves up like you wouldn't believe. Like what Eddie said last week was appalling. And I got great respect. I mean, I joke about Eddie because I've been a competitor against him for many years. But, I have great respect. He's made 2 World Cup finals. You know, he's won Super Rugby. Like the guys don't do that if you're a mug. And he survived 25 years. He's phenomenal. But what he said last week was absolutely outrageous. But the English media didn't come out and say, oh, it's outrageous. The players didn't say that's outrageous. They lapped it up. But that's when English teams fail. They talk it up publicly. You can talk it up inside your change room when no one's listening. So, listen, boys, we want to win this World Cup. We're going out to win it. But once you get out and you start pumping your own tyres up in public, the opposition get cross. And all it does is empower your opponents. And that's exactly what they did. And then things went wrong. It put pressure on the players. I've never seen Owen Farrell drop a ball twice in a game. And that's what happened.
Are we buying this? English arrogance has cost England? Is this not just like a team with a hangover from a World Cup? I don't think they've talked themselves up after they got hammered in the World Cup final. Like, it wasn't close. They weren't in that game. I blame the early injury to Sinclair. Like,
I would have thought there is a huge degree of arrogance about it all. But whether or not it cost them the game, it's a different question. I'd say
it cost them the game on the point that they went out there kind of thinking that they'll just win. And it's you know, I made the point in the basketball team. It's like when you're you can't turn on the switch in the middle of a game. You have to be up for the game mentally at the start. I equated it to like when you wake up in a hotel in a strange place after coming home at 4 or 5 in the morning and you're trying to find the light for the toilet. You're not a scanning the walls one.
Yes,
that's what it's like in a game when you're not tuned in and you haven't been psychologically ready for the battle. You have to be mentally up for it. And last week was a prime example of that. It happens weekly in all codes where a team goes, we'll win. We'll win, and you can talk. You can talk about it in meetings. You can say we have to be ready for it. But unless the players actually have that fear of losing or bought into it.
Were you playing in that game against Antrim where they nearly beat you that year in the back door? Were you playing that game?
No, I wasn't. No. I was injured.
Right. That's why they got nearly beaten. What was the next? Sligo was the next one, was it?
Sligo, yeah.
Were you playing
yeah.
that game?
No, I was. That was a year I broke the metatarsal. Yeah, I had nothing to do with those bad performances. No, I'm only messing. But yeah, look, it's exactly that. You know, and what seeps in from the outside is even more dangerous. As in, you can tell, you know, your own team and your own teammates. Oh, we must be ready. But it's when you go home and who are you playing the weekend? It's like, oh, you'll beat them in Tralee. Jesus.
Yeah.
And that just seeps in, and that's what happened in England. They went out to France last week. They thought this was going to be a piece of cake. And in fairness to them, as bad as they were and as bad as it was going, they found the switch eventually.
They did.
Looked like at a stage that this was very possible for them to come back. Now, there were inspirational tries from Johnny May, but you would have felt that they did have the chance to come back, but the French copped on again. But I think you'll see a different England the weekend, and I think you'll see an England that were hurt by last week and have a point to prove and no better people to prove it against than the Scots for them.
I wonder, do England feel that they need to be in an unbelievably dominant position, and they're very much based on kind of a boulder rolling down a hill method? Because like, once France scored that early try, are they like, well, we're not going to hammer them, so what's the point? Like, Eddie Jones in his pre-match comments was like, we need to bully them. And, like, today it's like, we want to go hard at them. And, like, there's a lot of, like, I described him like an MMA fighter earlier on. There is a lot of kind of boxing talk, like pummeling a team, pulverising them. It's very violent dialogue from the English players and management. Like, there is an air of violence about what they're saying, that they need to hammer a team and, like, keep punching their bloodied corpse. That seems to be the English rugby mentality, which is, I guess when you're reading it, it's kind of sometimes a little bit horrific to read, but
public, like, schoolboy bullies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but when you see the old Lions videos, you see them in the dressing room getting ready to play, and they do, that's, you know, it's boxing, it's warfare. Like, you know, if you're a forward, and if you're not in that frame of mind, you're not in the right vicinity to be playing in especially as a forward. You have to be in that absolute war. It's a war zone nowadays.
But like for England then last week, it's a case of, oh my God, we're not going to be able to, you know, urinate on a dead body here today. We're not going to be able to hammer this team. We're actually going to have to win a rugby match. And perhaps that doesn't actually help the English psyche, this rugby team. They need to hammer everybody. And if they're in a real dogfight then, like, I know...
I go against you and I just say that they just literally thought that this was going... They were going to batter them and bully them. And yeah, they thought the scoreline was going to be 44-16. And then they could come out and say afterwards, yeah, we did bully them. But of course, when you keep saying that and you have a belief that you're going to win, one, you're riling up the French, and the French are a very proud nation, so they're saying they will, in their shit, bully us. We'll come back right back at them, and that's just what happened.
They started to get a foothold in the scrum as well, and they did start to bully the French, and they did get back into the game as a result of that.
That's
so
true, yeah.
There's definitely something to it, though. Right, last story that we wanted to talk about this morning was the potential for Leo Messi to end up Manchester City. Yesterday on the show, Graham Hunter told us that there's a clause in Leo Messi's contract which allows him to leave for free at the end of every season if he chooses to do so. Now, there's a lot of politics going on in Barcelona. There are always a lot of politics going on, and Messi was just slapping Abidal down. But if you're Manchester City and Pep Guardiola, what are you doing to try and woo Leo Messi at this point?
Everything.
Champions League, you are the missing piece of the jigsaw. You don't need to woo him much. You've got Pep Guardiola. You've got a load of money. He's available for free at the end of the season, as you
said. It's an amazing clause to have in his contract. His agent, like, deserves a pay rise.
A million a week netto. That will give you 50 million. You won't even have to do those Pepsi ads anymore. What is it? But it's not money that's going to motivate him. So, like,
no, it isn't money that's going to motivate him. It's the new challenge, though, that might motivate him. It's something different that might motivate. Like, no matter what he does, he's an absolute icon in Barcelona for the rest of his life. So whether he goes now or never goes, nothing that, like, you look at Iniesta, he went off to China, and whenever he comes back to Spain, he'll be red carpet rolled out to him into the training ground and all that. And Messi would be the same. And, you know, even it'd be kind of like the time Zola came to the Premiership, like, it, you know, that little bit of magic coming back into the thing, and he would be just absolutely unbelievable at City, and it would really spice up the Premiership. It'd make the Premiership so much more exciting every week. We wouldn't have to be watching Spain to watch. Absolutely, it would. let's not fool around here. Man City launched Messi into that team, and they're going to be challenging Liverpool next year. That's a fact.
Yeah, gets the opportunity to play at Turf Moor and things like that, which should be like put on the contract in front of you. Come to the Premier League, and this will be something.
I'd say
really
what'll be on his contract is he's not playing in Turf Moor. Yeah,
I don't think this is going to happen. But like, imagine if you're Eric Abidal and you're the guy who was responsible for letting Lionel Messi go. Like, that is not the person you want to be in Barcelona.
You're getting sacked that day.
Immediately.
It's like, we're blaming you. You're going to go out front. You're going to make the announcement happening.
Yeah,
and then you're coming in here and this is your stuff.
But the hassle that, like, if he goes, whatever manager is there, that if he's anything to do with it, like, his job is untenable really going forward, because as soon as start next year, lose 4 or 5 games, it'll be, oh my God, get rid of this guy. He lost this Messi and he's losing.
If you're Messi, is there any victory to be had in leaving Barcelona? So you're leaving a place where no matter what you do, the end of your career is going to be considered... Like, you can wind down happily and nobody at Barcelona wants you to leave. So if you go to City, there's massive pressure on you. You've got to reach the peak of your career, even though you're fading as a player, not that much, but like a little bit. Is there anything to be gained from Messi's point of view in going?
From Messi's point of view, like, if you think that working with Pep Guardiola would bring you another Champions League medal because he is so desperate for it, then yes, of course there is a point of going.
All right, on that note, thanks, lads. That's all from us this Thursday morning here on OTB AM. Back in your radios tonight, we'll Off the Ball from 7 o'clock. You can subscribe to the OTB AM podcast, fully timestamped, so you can flick through for whatever bits you want. Michael Brick Walsh, your top 5 stories this morning, the Shot Clock with Kieran Donaghy, our weekend Gaelic football preview, virtual insanity, and much more besides. If you missed anything, you can get us on YouTube. OTB AM, Ireland's first and only sports breakfast show. We're here every morning. We'll see you tomorrow. Good luck.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.